On the Verge Part 2, are we heading towards another global conflagration?
Conflict is at our door. Russia has brought war back to Europe, and we must be prepared for the skill of war our grandparents and great-grandparents endured.
That's NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte speaking in Berlin yesterday, but what exactly was it like going through a war? In other news...
That is the sound of a nightclub smoking area, but I'm here because the police want to show me what they're doing differently this year to keep our Christmas parties safe. I'm LBC's Fraser Knight, and I'm out in Shoreditch.
And in relation to that, the Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, Sir Mark Rowley, is here also taking your calls exclusively on LBC. All starts after the 7 o'clock news.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, there are concerns hospital admissions for flu could triple by the peak of the pressures on the NHS. Cases and hospital admissions are continuing to rise sharply, days ahead of a pre-Christmas strike by resident doctors. Health leaders have warned the NHS is experiencing a worst-case scenario. Dr. Lindsay Broadbent is Assistant Professor in Virology at the University of Surrey.
The virus is mostly spreading among young people. We have very, very high rates of positivity in school-aged children. But the problem is when those children mix with people that are more vulnerable, like those that are over 65, that's when we get those people ending up in hospital.
The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, will be taking your calls with Nick later this morning. The White House has warned Donald Trump is sick of meetings that are failing to achieve peace in Ukraine. It's not clear if the US will send a representative to this weekend's European talks on ending the war with Russia. Officials say the meeting may not be worthy of their time. Ministers have promised to create 50,000 more places in England's schools for children with special educational needs. Local councils will receive £3 billion over the next 3 years as the number of pupils in need of SEND support continues to rise. The Metropolitan Police says it is stepping up the use of data analysis to target its resources in London over Christmas. Additional teams are being deployed to crime hotspots, including this officer on patrol in Shoreditch.
When you do have a lot of people together, people are perhaps in drink, then there's the opportunity both for violence amongst those people, but also they become victims quite often themselves as well when they're not as aware of their surroundings. So we tend to see an uplift in violence and violence with injury, and also theft with people having their mobile phones snatched out of their hands.
The Metropolitan Police Chief, Sir Mark Rowley, will be here for Call the Commissioner later in the programme. Pub chiefs have demanded urgent tax relief to help avoid widespread closures and job cuts. Industry leaders have held an emergency summit to discuss sharp rises in business rates from April next year. The Treasury says it's committed to protecting hospitality venues. And in the last few minutes, figures show monthly GDP fell by 0.1% in October, following a similar fall in September. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago, will reopen this morning at 97.03. It closed up 47 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather more settled today with sunny spells for many. Some rain in central and eastern England with blustery showers in the northwest. A high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Waitrose presents 3 for 2 on chilled party food.
Kelly, meet everyone.
Hi, nice to meet you.
8 guests, one host who knows exactly what will bring them together.
Food's ready.
Starring number one king prawn toasts with crispy sesame seeds, soft polar bear bao buns bursting with hoisin veg filling, and meltingly tender Wagyu beef mini pies.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected lines of stores subject to availability. Prices may vary in Channel Islands, Little Waitrose and Partners and concessions. Cheapest item free.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 4 minutes after 7 on Friday, December the 12th. The diagnosis from the Health Secretary is grim. A, quote, tidal wave of flu tears through our hospitals. It could cause the NHS to collapse, our cherished institution of more than 70 years. He's here taking your calls exclusively on LBC later in the show. Here he is speaking yesterday, pleading with those resident doctors.
We've put that to the BMA. If doctors vote to end next week's strikes, we will move forward with that immediately in the new year.
Plus, with accusations of two-tier policing and failing Londoners ringing in their ears, the Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, Sir Mark Rowley, said he's keen to improve a culture within his force.
I recognise, I've been really clear, that there are deep systemic issues that go back over decades, a whole pattern of things that have created a too comfortable environment that has created the volume of problem that we've been rooting out.
And he's also here on LBC, exclusively taking your calls. And in other news, as the Director General of NATO warns, we must prepare for a war the like of which, in my case, our parents, or in many of your cases, your grandparents endured. We'll be asking exactly what that will mean. And staying on that war footing, speaking yesterday, the White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt says President Trump is frustrated over the Ukraine conflict.
If there is a real chance of signing a peace agreement, if we feel like those meetings are worthy of someone on the United States' time this weekend, then we will send a representative.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060-973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The warning could really be no more stark. And the concerns and expressed by Wes Streeting. He's written a newspaper article, he's in the Times, and he's here on LBC later this morning. And he said to speaks of a tidal wave of flu tearing through our hospitals. He says the health service was facing a worst case scenario this month due to an unprecedented wave of super flu. And he expresses a real concern that if the resident doctors go ahead with their strike, the NHS in parts will collapse. Your A&Es will simply not be able to cope. The operation that you, your loved ones, your friends have been waiting for will be cancelled, and Lord only knows when they would be rescheduled. LBC's East Midlands reporter George Ike is joining us from outside the Queen's Medical Centre and A&E department in Nottingham, which is the largest trauma centre in the country, joins me now. George, good morning.
Nick, good morning. Well, we all know those flu cases are rising right now. We've still not reached that peak. Some doctors believing we're about 2 weeks off. And yesterday I got to see that for myself with the amount of people who are in hospital with flu at Nottingham City Hospital and here at Queen's Medical Centre, as you say, the largest major trauma unit in the UK. Now, to get access to the ward, I donned my PPE, which was very much a throwback to the pandemic, putting on a blue face mask, a plastic disposable apron and a pair of rubber gloves to head into that ward where flu admissions are up by 56% on this time last year, and where I met 55-year-old Alison Clark, who's been hospitalised by the flu.
This year we've seen a 56% increase compared to the same period last year in the number of flu cases here at Nottingham and at Sherwood Forest hospitals. And the projections from the data we've got is that that flu peak is still coming, still rising. And that's worrying because we're under pressure already at the hospital and in the community. The hospitals are here to look after the patients that need them. We'd never turn anybody away. We have lots of policies and protocols to help manage that situation. We prioritise the sickest patients, and unfortunately, some patients have to wait longer than we'd like.
That was actually Dr. Harry Pick, one of the respiratory consultants at Nottingham University Hospital, setting the scene for us. But I think we can hear from Alison now, who's been hospitalised with the flu.
Been horrendous. None of the inhalers were working. The meds weren't working. So I phoned 111, like the doctor told me to do if I'd got a problem. And anyway, the 111 sent an ambulance straight out for me. Go and get a flu jab, go and get a COVID jab. Because you never know. You think that you're not going to get it. There's always that small chance that you will. Or in my case, the bigger chance. I really thought I'd be okay because I use hand gel, wash hands all the time while we're out, we're using gel.
And Nick, I have to say the sheer number of people, young and old, who are lying in beds on this ward was really shocking to see. And the measures having to be taken for infection control are just unbelievable, including putting on this PPE every time you walk through the vacuum doors to the ward, removing it every time you come out, putting alcohol gel on and putting that PPE into a clinical waste bin. But as far as face masks are concerned from the general public, well, the Prime Minister's been telling LBC how the government will respond with that guidance.
There's been a lot of talk about face masks and whether we're changing guidance. We're not changing that. But there are simple, common sense things that people can do in terms of measures to not sort of pass the flu on, if you like, particularly to vulnerable people, about ventilation, washing your hands, just keeping a bit of distance where you can. So we're not putting in extra guidance or rules or anything like that, but we are asking people to use their common sense, as most people will, and nobody really wants to pass the flu to somebody at Christmas time. And so courteous, common sense approach will make a big difference.
Elsewhere in the Midlands, demand for hospital services, including A&E for flu, has led to Birmingham's hospitals having to declare a critical incident earlier this week, with wait times for their emergency department rising rapidly as demand outran capacity. That was stepped down yesterday evening after days of people being told to consider whether they really needed to visit the hospital. And the message when it comes to avoiding flu is very clear.
We know the flu vaccine is moderately effective at preventing you from getting flu. But if you do pick up the flu that's circulating the strains this year, it is very effective at preventing you getting such severe disease that you either need to come to hospital, or if you do come to hospital, you become so poorly that you end up in critical care. And then it's the simple things, very similar to during the pandemic. So it's reducing your social contact if you do have signs or symptoms of a cold or flu-like illness, washing your hands for at least 30 seconds more frequently, and especially if you've been out in public places.
So as we head into the weekend, the advice is to consider if you really need to socialise, if you're feeling unwell, and if you think you might be coming down with the flu, then to stock up on paracetamol and tissues in the hope you'll be able to stay out of the very busy hospitals. And Nick, I'm going to go and put some gel on my hands now, just to be on the safe side.
George Ike reporting from outside the Queen's Medical Centre A&E department in Nottingham, 11 after 7. Let's bring into the conversation Salwan Malik, who's Vice President of the Royal College of Emergency Medicine. And first, a very simple question, if I may. Is this now an epidemic, a pandemic? How is it determined exactly the level of this outbreak of flu? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you so much for inviting me on the show. Yes, I mean, it is more of an epidemic, I suspect. I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm just a frontline emergency medicine consultant, right? Just trying to get through this crowd. But yes, we are certainly seeing the spike happen earlier than we have on previous years. And as your colleague mentioned, yes, we haven't seen the peak yet. We've still got a few more weeks before we see that. I work down in the south, and I think we're a little bit behind, to be honest, but we are starting to see it this week really affect our processes in the emergency department.
Why is the peak earlier with this particular strain?
That's a good question, actually, Nick. Like I said, I'm not an epidemiologist. I don't know why it is earlier, but all I know how it is affecting the congestion that we have in the department. I can tell you how we're making it worse, if you'd like.
Yeah, go ahead, of course.
So as you're well known to everybody, I think, in the country, in the nation, that we have a crisis in our emergency departments nationally with regards to corridor medicine. We've got patients, you know, I've just checked my screen this morning, we've got 27 patients in our corridor, trolley to trolley, touching shoulder to shoulder. There is no infection prevention control measure. You can't do any infection control measure, and therefore the virus can seed and spread, and we're creating more of a problem.
Just to clarify, 27 patients, sorry, is that one particular hospital or is that a hospital trust that applies over a number of hospitals?
No, my ED, absolutely,
Will you tell me which hospital, or you don't want to tell me which hospital it is?
I don't think it's relevant, actually there are multiple hospitals in the same
situation.
Okay, but
it's in the London area, is it, just so that I get a sense of it?
I work in the south,
And this would be, do you reckon, mirrored across the whole of the country? It's not particular to your part of the country?
Absolutely, Nick. We poll our clinical leads, and I'm a clinical lead as well. We poll our clinical leads quite regularly on the state of everyone's corridor. It is not a surprise. Shockingly, it is not a surprising figure, and everyone is suffering at the moment.
I've read that it takes some days for the vaccine to kick in. What level of care does it provide? Sort of the minute you walk out of the pharmacy, is it worth pursuing it?
It's not an instant thing. I've had the vaccine. I'm immunosuppressed, Nick. I've got lupus, so I'm on quite high drugs and all that sort of thing. And I'm still on the front line having to face this virus. You know, it's a bit scary. I'm not going to lie. I've got a little boy, got a vulnerable dad at home.
Oh, Lord.
So, you know, it's important that we have it. I absolutely was making sure I booked my appointment to get straight in there. All I can say is that it is really important to do so. We're seeing some quite young patients attend emergency departments, Nick, not just because they've got a snotty nose, but actually because they're actually really unwell. So, you know, it can just hit you. So I would encourage anyone, certainly if they're eligible for the vaccine, to get it done, but certainly to get it done if they can, because it does provide some protection to yourself and also to others as well.
Lastly, you won't have had time to look at the morning newspapers, that's my job, but Wes Streeting, the Health Secretary, has an article in one of them, and he's going to join us later on the show here on LBC, and he has a very real fear that if the resident doctor strike goes ahead, It could force the NHS, to use his words, to collapse. I don't want to drag you into the political arena in any sense, but are those is rather overstating the case, or would you say that Mr. Streeting's broadly got it right?
Well, yeah, as you said, I can't comment on the strikes. All I can say is we've done strikes before. We can handle strikes. I can't handle the corridor patient congestion. I'm afraid that is a much more serious problem, and that is actually causing harm. We've got evidence for it. We haven't seen the evidence of strikes causing harm. I can't comment on whether they should be taking strike action. All I can say is we would want a negotiation. We would want desperately to get an agreement because they can't go on, because it's very difficult to sustain for our consultant colleagues.
Look after yourself, look after your father, look after your son as well. Good luck and thank you for your time. Salwan Malik, Vice President of the Royal College of Emergency Medicine. Calls already coming in on this. And again, I remind you, Wes Streeting will be with us taking your calls later in the show. Now, later in this hour, so we heard that the NHS is on the verge of collapse. And here's On the Verge, part two of a world war.
Conflict is at our door. Russia has brought war back to Europe. And we must be prepared for the scale of war our grandparents and great-grandparents endured.
NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte speaking at an event in Berlin. I heard what war was like directly from my dad, who was in it, and my mum, who actually was in it as well. Many of you won't. We'll be telling you what that might be like later in the show. 7.15 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Health officials have warned the NHS could be facing its most challenging winter since the pandemic. The White House has warned Donald Trump is sick of meetings just for the sake of meeting on Ukraine. And figures released in the last 15 minutes say the UK economy contracted by 0.1% in October. Economists had been expecting a slight increase in GDP. LBC weather more settled with sunny spells for many, but rain in central and eastern parts and the northwest, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the M4, the westbound exit slip road at the M25 junction is closed. It's because a car is on fire. Now, the delays on the main carriageway are back to junction 4 at Heathrow, but it's having a knock-on effect as well to the M25 clockwise to that junction. So that's junction 15. There are lengthy delays on the approach. In Walthamstow, Forest Road is closed both ways outside Black Horse Road station. It's because a car has hit a building, which also means that the train station is closed for the investigation works to take place. On the trains, Thames Link services are delayed to and from St Pancras International, and Great Western Railway services are delayed to and from Paddington.
This is LBC.
This Christmas at Tesco, get a six-pack of Tesco Finest Mince Pies for just £1.50, down from £3 with your Tesco Club card. Finding great prices, that's what makes it Christmas. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of larger stores, mince pie six-pack ends 25th of December. Club card or app required.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to head over to BetVictor. They've got bags of offers and promotions kicking about.
Like what?
For a start, all them weekly promotions.
Oh, yeah?
There's the Loyalty Club, the BetVictor Predictor. And in Casino, they've got the Spinners Club, which is a weekly slot thingamajig. And you can also order food to your door.
Can you?
Oh, no, hang about. That's a different app.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet at BetVictor. 18 plus, terms and conditions apply, gambleaware.org.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late, but it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop, plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado, life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60, max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
19 minutes after 7, the first caller is going to be Phil. Come to you in just a moment, quickly through some of the front pages and this flu. outbreak of flu epidemic, I think we can allow ourselves to say this, flu epidemic. Well, actually, most of the newspapers, it's a choice of either flu or war. The Times, as I've referenced already, excuse me, God, please don't that come back. I've had the jab, it can't. Wes Streeting, strikes could force the NHS to collapse. I remind you, he's with us later in the show taking your calls. That's just after nine. The eye, super flu hits UK. Cases highest in young children, that's a concern. Daily Express, stop reckless strikes as NHS fights the super flu. And the other story, which is of grave concern, is the idea we could be inching towards some kind of world war. The Daily Mail, Britain's on a war footing, warning from Labour's Al Carnes. Just to remind you, of course, he's the Armed Forces Minister. That's why it makes that so relevant. And an aspect of that, the front page of the Daily Telegraph, Britain must not rely on US for defence. To the LBC app, that's giving the grave warnings about the state of the NHS. NHS facing Christmas collapse over tidal wave. And lastly, let's just change the mood music a little bit. And it's the front page of The Sun Online, and they have got a secret picture of Jordan Henderson, who I think was once the Liverpool captain and is now sort of representative for Saudi Arabian football teams, I understand. And here he is talking to Mo Salah in a secret rendezvous in London. Mo Salah being, of course, one of Liverpool's most successful stars of recent years, I believe. Certainly is a considerable goal scorer, but said to be unhappy up at Anfield. So is that? That lifts the mood a bit, doesn't it? Does that mean that if you're a Liverpool fan, your former skipper is going to take Mo Salah off your hands? You'll have to see how that plays out. 7:20. Phil's in Chobham. Phil, your reaction to what you're hearing? Grim, isn't it?
It is a bit, Nick. I'm a first-time caller.
How lovely to have you on. Thank you so much.
No problem at all. Very quick one before diving into that. Can we please have more Nigel Owen?
He would
solve so many of these problems. He's very impartial.
He's such a... You refer to the arguably the greatest ref there's ever been in the world of rugby. And by the way, a tremendous bloke. Just a smashing guy. I will try and think of an excuse to get him on before Christmas. I give you my word, Phil.
Wonderful. I just think with this, everybody, they're going to lose if they try playing politics with Wes Streeting.
Well, this is the key. What should the resident doctors... So Mr. Streeting has written the newspaper article. He's going to be on our show in just over an hour and a half. He's trying to speak directly to the doctors to get over the heads of the BMA, of the unions. What should the doctors do now, Phil?
I'm not a big fan of unions, to be honest, but... Mm. I can only base it on facts and what you hear. And you had somebody on the other day from the BMA who said, look, they've said something in the meeting and we just want it in writing.
Yes, that's true.
If I was dealing with a politician, I'd definitely want it in writing.
Yep, I can understand that.
As opposed to sort of being promised something and it gets whipped away afterwards. And he's controlling the media narrative, whereas I think the doctors are coming off a little bit worse. And to say that we're heading into a sort of a crisis at Christmas, we tend to have pretty lumpy times most Christmases over winter.
If you get in a conflict, sometimes the best way is to try and offer a hand of peace, as it were, try and find a way through, rather than necessarily immediately take to the barricades. I think it's fair to characterise what Mr. Streeting is doing as more taking to the barricades than offering the hand of peace. Is it the right tactic?
I think there's definitely going to be something negotiated here, and I'm not quite sure his approach is working. I know he's trying to sort of come out because he wants to lead the party, but he's doing it, or the people working on his behalf are doing it, necessarily approaching it in the right way. Right. I think just stick to keep it as simple as possible. And as I say, if they haven't actually had what he's offered in writing, that's probably a good starting point, because the doctor you had on was quite clear that they'd be happy to look at the detail if they were to provide it.
And that is one of the questions that I will be asking him. And also, you will recall the senior representative of the BMA said that effectively they're massaging the figures. They're effectively pretending to give jobs, but in reality they're not. Lastly, have you had the jab? Are you wearing face masks? Do you intend to have the jab? On a personal level, what are you going to do?
I had the jab, and I ended up having the COVID jab many months in advance because my wife has a low immune system. Oh, so,
Good, thank you. Thanks for reminding me of the great man, the great rugby ref, and have yourself a good weekend, Phil. Thank you. I've got about another 8 shows before Christmas, 7 or something. I'll try and think of a way to get him on. There must be a way somehow. Just to give you the context again, we heard in our report, didn't we? In Nottingham, there's a 56% increase in last week. If you move it out nationally, it's a 55%. It is at the rate of 2,660 new cases per day presenting. That would be enough to fill 3 hospital trusts. The fear is that it'll go to 8,000 a day. That's over treble where we currently find ourselves. And that's already giving warnings that we might collapse. We'll come back to your reactions on that. Now, in other matters, the Christmas party season is now in full swing. I hope you enjoy whatever you go to. But police, meanwhile, are focusing their resources in areas where they know crime happens most. Darker nights, larger crowds often see a spike in people being preyed upon or targeted for their mobile phones. Officers in London have told LBC they're convinced a more focused approach this year will make the streets safer. So our reporter Fraser Knight went out with the Met to Shoreditch to see how.
We have fully gate-crashed a Christmas party here, but I promise it's for good reason, because while pubs and bars right across London are filling up with colleagues having questionable conversations, outside, the police are stepping up their presence.
We do have a lot of people together, and people are perhaps in drink, then there's the opportunity both for violence amongst those people, but also they become victims quite often themselves as well when they're not as aware of their surroundings. So we tend to see an uplift in violence and violence with injury, and also theft with people having their mobile phones snatched out of their hands.
The Met, just like all police forces, are focusing more this season on being in the right places by moving officers into known crime hotspots. This is Chief Inspector Steve Connolly.
Well, over the last year in Shoreditch, we have created a dedicated town centre team, 32 constables just dedicated to this area, with 4 sergeants overseeing them and an inspector dedicated to this area as well.
So do you think that you are in a much better position this winter than perhaps the team was last winter?
Yeah, 100%. And I think if you look at some of the figures, so in fact every crime is down in this area compared to this time last year.
And you think that's fully down to having more officers around, visible presence?
Yeah, I'm convinced it is, yeah.
Commissioner Mark Rowley joined us as we visited Spaces Unlocked, a large venue where some 300 people were cracking open the fizz at their annual do.
And actually having police officers around, we spot those individuals, it makes a massive difference.
He's speaking here with the boss, Kerry O'Connor.
I think it's part and parcel now of late night venues have to have that extra precaution. It's part of the way life is at the moment. You know, most of the time I do a lot of the nights and I'm working till 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. And without those relationships, I certainly wouldn't feel so confident in doing those type of nights or events in this area.
London Mayor Sadiq Khan, who of course has been under a lot of pressure about the safety of London streets, says having more officers out will address the key issues.
I'm not complacent. We've got to do more. But the police are working incredibly hard, working with councils, working with nightclubs, working with shops and others to make sure this is as safe as it possibly can be.
E-bikes, larger crowds and darker nights means there's more opportunity for criminals to operate. The Met, though, hopes that having more bobbies on the beat will bring a more, if not festive, at least safe environment for people to enjoy.
That was LBC's Fraser Knight reporting and reminding you, the first of the two. Well, it really is a powerhouse phone in here on LBC, isn't it? You're going to have the Health Secretary later in the show, but in just over an hour, a fraction over an hour's time, your opportunity to put your calls to the Metropolitan Police Commissioner, Sir Mark Rowley. And that's on all matters, by the way. It's not just on the Christmas crackdown. There are many, many other issues that I'm sure you will wish to discuss. Not, I'm so sorry. Did I say 8:30? I do apologise. Just after 8 o'clock. So I meant to say just over half an hour. I don't know where that came from. It's the flu, I imagine. It's this damn jab that I've had. Just over half an hour's time, your opportunity. That's just after 8, 7:28 right now. Just after 8 is your calls to Sir Mark Rowley. And as I say, not just about this Christmas crackdown, also this idea of two-tier policing. And sadly, the great city of London, earning a rather unwanted title, it is the phone theft capital of Europe. That's something else that we may discuss. Now, let's come to your reactions back to the conversation with which we started the show, which is the problems with the NHS. Steve in Somerset, this panic is pathetic. We have military medics, so why wait? Get the military in now, help across the country in all areas of the NHS. Infection control is about controlling the situation, not a wave of ridiculous pain and panic. Well, I might be with you, sir, but when you have the man who's running the NHS, effectively, the Health Secretary, when you hear him say that if the resident doctors pursue their strike action, we could be looking at the collapse, I think, with respect, we should be listening to him. Eric in Enfield, I had to take a family member to Barnet A&E last Saturday for treatment. I hope he, she, they will. The waiting room was full. Family member was checked in, triage, had blood and diagnostic tests completed, and finally saw A&E, doctor and consultant for full diagnosis and treatment, all completed in and out within 3.5 hours. That's... you're incredibly lucky, sir. Some people wait for 3.5 hours. I would not say the NHS is collapsing just yet. No, I stress again, he's saying this on the verge of. Eric concludes, that said, very few people in the hospital were wearing masks. Same subject, Stephen Milton Keynes. There are 780 hospitals in England and Wales, with flu expected to reach 5,000 cases by the weekend. That's 6 patients per hospital on average. Surely the NHS can cope with that and will have winter plans. I think, Steve, you weren't listening to my colleague's report from that hospital in Nottingham, the largest or the largest major trauma centre in the country, the Queen's Medical Centre in Nottingham, and that's, I think, the reality. So I'm sure your sums are right, and I won't check them out. I think the reality is to be seen on the wards. And here's a financial reality as well.
It's not a great way to end the year. GDP growth fell 0.1% in the 3 months to October. I'm Christian May from City AM, discussing this with Nick shortly.
And as if it's not gloomy enough, we're going to be preparing you for war after the news as well. I will try and find a story. I don't know about David Beckham or something that makes us laugh a little bit. But it's 7:30 now. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC News Time. Thomas Watts.
It's feared the number of patients in England's hospitals with flu could triple before infections peak. Cases and hospital admissions are continuing to rise sharply, days ahead of a pre-Christmas strike by resident doctors. The White House says Donald Trump is sick of meetings that are failing to achieve progress on Ukraine. Further peace talks are due to take place in Europe this weekend, but the US has suggested it might not turn up. Figures out this morning show Britain's economy shrank for another month in October. Economists had been expecting a slight increase in GDP, but it fell by 0.1%. LBC weather more settled today with sunny spells for many, rain in central and eastern England and some blustery showers in the northwest. A high of 12 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Coming up this afternoon, he was on to talk about his new film, but in the end, Jimmy Carr and I put the world to rights.
The idea of taxation on businesses is it's insane. It's insane that we had a budget that poor. It's insane that we have a midwit in charge. It's crazy.
Comedy legend Jimmy Carr here to talk about his tax affairs, pubs, the midwit he says is running the country, and masculinity. It's a romp across the whole vista. You won't want to miss it. This afternoon from 4.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Caught in the chaos of Christmas, fearing crimbo limbo, Radio Times has your festive entertainment sorted. That's one less thing to worry about. So you can focus on wrapping the presents and buying the turkey. Pick up the Christmas issue for your 14-day guide to the best TV, streaming, film, radio and podcasts. Plus, plenty of reviews, recommendations and star-studded exclusives at your fingertips. It wouldn't be Christmas without Radio Times. On sale now.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
Have you noticed the way fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because conveying your message with sound is the most effective way to communicate to the players on the pitch that they're rubbish. And this works in advertising too. You see, research shows how brands that use radio to amplify their advertising are 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:33, staying with three grim words, prepare for war. And that's the director of NATO. We'll hear more on that in a moment. Into the world of finance, Christian May is editor-in-chief at City AM, and there's a bit of a warfare as well with our economic indicators, and they're pretty gloomy there. Christian, good morning.
Nick, I know I don't often turn up this slot with the best of news, but you're even depressing me with war, economic collapse.
Yep. Let's see if we've got flu as well.
Yeah, flu. God, goodness. Let's see if we can end on a good
one. Come on, Christian.
We won't kick off on one, I'm afraid, because GDP figures released just in the last half hour or so show that the UK economy, in the 3 months to October, contracted by 0.1%. As if it would have been bad enough if it had been flat, it contracted. Now, that follows a period of pretty anemic, almost irrelevant growth in the various quarters beforehand. It was 0.1% in the 3 months to September. It was 0.2% in the 3 months to August. So if you're going from 0.2 to 0.1 to dropping by 0.1, you can see a trajectory there, I'm afraid. Mm. Looking into the details a bit, the services sector, which powers most of our economy, showed no growth at all in those 3 months to October. Production, that's manufacturing, down 0.5%. Construction, which is a sector effectively in recession on its own, down another 0.3%. A lot of this is being attributed to the budget uncertainty and the chaos and people putting off decisions, and that is entirely true. But it also forms part of a bigger story. GDP growth has been sliding since the beginning of the year. It has been coming down and down and down again. So that is the context in which this country and this government is going to take us into the new year. And all I can say is I wish them all the very best for all our sakes, because we cannot go on like this.
But at least in the new year, we've got a World Cup to look forward to. England and Scotland are there. We must hope that Wales and Northern Ireland get there as well. We have a United Kingdom. We can look forward to going to the footy. Christian.
Yes, indeed, if you've got deep enough pockets.
Oh.
Now, I'm only very late in life coming to this sport, Nick. I've got to confess that. My son is 8 years old. He's become a massive Crystal Palace fan. I'm beginning to get in the groove. I was discussing with him yesterday on the way to his Carol concert that when I was his age, it was Man United who dominated everything. And he said, oh, yeah, that's right, because you had George Best. And I thought,
How old do you think your father is, for God's sake?
That stung a bit. But I tell you what, I won't be taking him to the World Cup. I better get that out in the open, because it's going to be very expensive. Fans have been warned that they'll be faced around £3,000 if you want to go to the final. The figures released yesterday, I think they were confirmed yesterday afternoon, FIFA has sparked fury among fans across the world, I should imagine, but pretty punchy reaction from the England fan associations, pointing out how much more expensive these tickets are going to be than they were in Qatar. The cheapest tickets for the final are going to come in at about £3,100 if you can get your hands on them. And they're several hundred dollars either way for the matches in the run-up to that. So if you thought that this World Cup was getting off to a strange enough start after FIFA made up a peace prize and gave it to Donald Trump, they've now angered people with their ticket prices, which are far, far higher. You've got to take into account, of course, quite how much it's going to cost people, the most committed fans, to get to the States and get around, not just the States, but get around that continent. I was told yesterday that getting around Qatar was basically just like taking the tube, whereas if you're going to be going from Mexico to Toronto to New York, it's going to add up, isn't it?
I admire your lad for supporting a local team. Good on him. Well done. What's City AM online about with this growth spurt? Any good news there?
Well, I mean, it depends how you want to take a look at it. So the CBI, the biggest business group in the country, has put out its latest economic analysis and forecasts, and it has upgraded its growth forecast for next year from 1% to 1.3%. And you might say, well, that's something. Well, first of all, 1.3% ain't going to cut it. And secondly, they say that this will be driven largely by borrowing and public spending paid for by taxes coming into effect later. So in their own words, it's nothing to celebrate, and it actually will risk leaving the public finances in a more vulnerable position. So if genuine economic activity, by which I mean the private sector, does not come back to health in a pretty meaningful way over the course of next year, then the growth we do have will be largely an illusion.
Grateful for that. Christian, enjoy your weekend. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM, lifting the mood so successfully there and taking us to 7:38. Come back to this idea of the crisis. We're going to be telling you in a moment how we could be on the verge of a world war here in the United Kingdom. We could be on, certainly England anyway, and I think it's actually much better in Wales, Scotland, and Northern Ireland, on the verge of the hospitals collapsing. Ben's in Sheffield. What is it you want to tell us, Ben? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. I really wanted to call on the back of a text you just read out about drafting.
Which one was
in
that,
military.
Sir? Oh,
the one about drafting in the military.
Yes, yeah.
So I am in the military. I'm a military doctor.
Right. They always say if you want something done, ask a soldier, sir.
There may be some truth in that, although, like any big government organisation, we have our problems too. I really wanted just to call in on that topic specifically, because it's an idea that I've heard, you know, a lot on the radio, the idea that somehow we can solve these problems in the NHS just by drafting in the military.
What's the reality? Do I call you doctor? You're a doctor, are you? Or a surgeon?
I am, yeah.
You're a doctor.
Yeah,
what's the reality, doctor?
The reality is that the the Defence Medical Services are far, far, far too small to even be a drop in the ocean of the problems in the NHS. I mean, we are set up to look after a workforce of less than 200,000 military personnel.
Right.
The NHS is set up to look after over 60 million people living in the UK. So the idea that we could solve these issues by getting a few hundred military doctors and nurses in, and frankly, we are already working in the NHS because the military hasn't got hospitals. So my data, I've just arrived at a shift at my hospital. It's an NHS hospital, and I'll be working here most of my working career, actually, will be spent in the NHS. So.
Right.
The idea that we're kind of sat on a shelf waiting, or in a box, you know, waiting to be brought out when there's a war is fanciful. And the idea that any of these problems in the NHS workforce or otherwise, or the current sort of flu endemic that we've got going around, could be solved by just getting the military involved is a flight of fantasy that just needs to be put to bed.
Lastly, you're in a unique position, Doctor, because you've just commented on the story we're currently doing, and we're now moving on to another story, which is the suggestion that we need to move to a war footing in the view of the Director General of NATO, Mark Rutte. Do you sense the British military is getting ready or would be ready for a war footing?
I sense that the British military is very much trying to, but is still being hamstrung by a lack of political will and, frankly, as it always comes down to, a lack of funds coming in a timely manner. We've definitely paid the peace dividend since the 1990s. Mm. And then the conflicts we have been involved with have looked very, very different in the past couple of decades compared to what we're trying to prepare for now.
Thank you for your service. Thanks for your job. Thanks for your call. Ben, have a quiet as you can shift today and enjoy your weekend if you've got any time off. Let's come back to why we're talking about this idea of a war. Here's NATO. Sorry, did I call him Director General? I do apologise. NATO Secretary General. He doesn't run the BBC yet. Hey, Mr. Rutte, yes? We've got a different job. Could you take over traitors? What? NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte.
At the end of this first quarter of the 21st century, conflicts are no longer fought at arm's length. Conflict is at our door. Russia has brought war back to Europe, and we must be prepared for the scale of war our grandparents and great-grandparents endured.
Now, I don't know about you, and this is a product of my age, but those words really hit home, because my late father served in the British Army, and my late mother, to do her bit, became a police officer with the Kent Force. So I thought, how am I going to make this come alive for you? There's only one person who can do it. It's my favourite historian, best-selling author, Sunday Times best-selling author, military historian and broadcaster, Professor Saul David, who has the ability to take you back decades, nay, centuries, and make it come alive with his writing. I don't know how he does it. He joins me now. Professor, how would you tell a generation, and I have listeners, I can assure you, in their 20s, they don't even remember the Berlin Wall, for God's sake. How are you going to make this come alive? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Well, first thing to say is Mark Rutte was absolutely right to say what he did. It sounds like scaremongering, doesn't it? But in reality, we're already at war with Russia in an unacknowledged war, a hybrid war in which Russia is trying to disrupt Europe, which, of course, has recently been described, Nick, by the Americans as facing civilizational erasure. You need to see the context of what he said. By what the Americans are doing, their attempt to force a peace on Ukraine, which will not be fair and which will simply encourage the Russians. How do you get the young to kind of understand what war is like? Well, yes. They need to read about the Second World War, which, of course, is hot. We're in that gray zone before we actually get to a hot war as far as the rest of Europe's concerned.
And when you do your research about conflicts on the scale of the First World War or the Second World War, what is the biggest impact for the citizens, not for the men and the women who have to go to war, but the people back home? How would you make that come alive for listeners?
Well, I mean, the point about both those world wars is that they were the first total wars in which civilians were actually involved. The Second World War, interestingly, Nick, was the first time that civilian casualties were greater than military casualties in any conflict. And so we're now in that space. If you travel to Ukraine now, you can see, you know, as I've done a number of times for the podcast, we've been covering the Ukraine war, and it is unusual for a historian to look at a modern war, but there are so many fascinating and worrying lessons to learn from what's happening in Ukraine, because the whole country is under siege. They are under attack cyber attacks, but also physical attacks, their physical safety. And of course, it just brings back to mind, you talked about your grandfather, my grandfather fought in the Second World War. He was a beach commando. He was sunk on a naval ship. But his whole family were also affected by the bombing of Britain. And that is nothing compared to what is going on in Ukraine now. So if you just look at a single night in London in the Second World War, the experience that it was for people when bombs were falling on London, and imagine that's happening all over Ukraine, and it could eventually be happening all over Europe, unless we listen to Rutter and actually make sure that the deterrence, that is, Europe's ability to say to America, to say sorry to Russia, I'm so furious about the way America's been behaving over the last few weeks that actually I'm beginning to see them as the enemy. That's wrong, obviously, Nick. If we actually got into a hot war with Russia, there would be explosions over the UK and over the continent of Europe, just like there were in the Second World War.
Saul, you mentioned your podcast. What's it called?
Battleground. Once a week we look at Ukraine, and once a week we look at history, and it's amazing how those two subjects intermesh, Nick. Exactly the point I've just been making.
Grateful as ever for your time. Thanks, Saul. Have a good weekend. Professor Saul David, military historian, Sunday Times best-selling author, broadcaster, and of course podcaster, as he just referenced there. All right, coming up after the news, we're going to speak about a major investment in SEN, special educational needs and disabilities, which of course is very challenging for so many parents. We've also talked about the collapse of the NHS and a possibly Third World War. So we need to lift the mood, and songs just ain't what they used to be. They do appear to have everything, because modern pop songs are more negative than tracks made 50 years ago, which had better lyrics. References to stress and negative sentiment are now more common, and as I said, songs ain't what they like to be, used to be, like Village People. We're looking at it later in the show to try and at least get you through Friday morning. It's just turned 7:46, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
There are concerns hospital admissions for flu could triple by the peak of the pressures this winter. The White House has warned Donald Trump is sick of meetings that are failing to achieve peace in Ukraine. And ministers have promised to create 50,000 more places in England's schools for children with special educational needs. LBC weather, more settled today, but some rain in eastern England and blustery showers in the northwest, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are delays on the M25 clockwise heading towards Junction 6 at Godston. It's because a car has broken down and one lane is closed. Also on the M25, there are lengthy delays anti-clockwise from Junction 17 at Maple Cross to 16 at the M40. There's just been an accident and traffic is being held. The M4 westbound to the M25 junction, there's a long queue because the exit slip road is closed after a car was on fire. There are delays from Junction 4 at Heathrow, but as traffic's having to go to Junction 5 and then come back to the M25, there's a lengthy delay on that side as well. And on the M40, the northbound exit slip road at Junction 2 at Beaconsfield stays closed.
This is LBC.
This Christmas at Tesco, get a six-pack of Tesco Finest Mince Pies for just £1.50, down from £3 with your Tesco Club card. Finding great prices, that's what makes it Christmas. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of larger stores, mince pie six-pack ends 25th of December. Club card or app required.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia, and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line, already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friends, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus, free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
11 minutes before 8, so the first of our powerhouse phone-ins, Met Commissioner Sir Mark Rowley. He's going to be with us at 8, and of course Health Secretary Wes Streeting, he's going to be with us at 9. So all available to take your calls. But to equally important matters, let's talk about SPEND, Special Educational Needs and Disabilities. And I've said before, and unfortunately this government minister will have to listen to it again, but there has been, when I started this work, if I mentioned SEND, I have to say a lot of people would have wondered what on earth it was, and I might not have got that much interest. Now, for whatever reason, even as I'm saying it now, the texts and emails are coming in. It is such a live issue, and the government is determined to try and do something about it. And here with more details of considerable sum of money to be invested is Labour MP and Minister for School Standards, Georgia Gould. Good to have you on, Minister. Thank you. Just before we start, I'm sure you and your colleagues have done research. Are we just getting better at diagnosing SEND pupils? Is there something going on we don't know about? Where do you stand on that? Good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here this morning. Yeah, I think we are getting better at diagnosing special educational needs. And, you know, I travel around the country visiting schools and, you know, it's absolutely the case that the needs are going up. I think the pandemic also kind of contributed to a kind of growth in some of children's needs around speech and language. But it is, you know, something that we're better at identifying. But sadly, when I speak to parents, we're not yet good enough at putting support in early to help parents, and they find that often they have to wait, you know, years for effective support that means that things reach crisis point that adds to the issue. And that's part of, I think, the legacy of the last of Conservative government.
Well, I think that there's one area you can probably imagine. Normally when Labour ministers and Secretary of State talk about the legacy, I might bark at them a little bit, but not here. I think you have inherited a hospital pass, and I do think previous administration has a lot to answer. So let's move on. You've got a heck of an uphill task. What is it that you and your colleagues are announcing today and hope to achieve?
Look, I'm really delighted to be announcing £3 billion that's going to be going into creating specialist places around the country. So that is support that's going into building new classrooms, adapting classrooms, making schools more accessible for children with special educational needs and disabilities. And, you know, I've seen around the country the difference this makes. I was at a school recently where they built a purpose-built, they called it a nurture classroom. It was a smaller classroom for children with additional needs. And I spoke to a mum whose son had been out of school for a year at primary, and he'd come into secondary. He had that extra support, and he was now back in mainstream playing rugby. And she was like, she just could never have imagined that he would be thriving. But it was having this space that was set up for his needs. So we want to see that kind of provision available across the country, and that's why we've set out this £3 billion investment.
£3 billion equals, broadly speaking, Minister, how many places, and when does it come online?
So it equals around 50,000 places. We're going to be setting out the allocations in the new year. So this starts in 2026. But this year, we've already invested £740 million into creating an extra 10,000 places. And I'm seeing that come to life within communities already.
And I'm not knocking it, Minister, what you're trying to achieve, but the scale of the problem, and that's great, that's hopefully 50,000, well, more than 50,000 children who will be helped, so that is fantastic. But you'll know, you'll be aware, the figure of SEND pupils is at 1.7 million, Minister. Mm. Isn't that the mountain you have to climb?
Yeah, so there are, you know, within our schools, many of those children are being educated brilliantly within mainstream classes. So this is a, you know, there is so much work already going on to support those children to thrive within schools. And that, you know, we're investing in teacher training and that wider support. But this investment, this £3 billion is a huge landmark moment, because there are children who need that extra bit of support that hasn't been available. Children I've met who are travelling 2 hours to get an education, children who are out of school, who are desperate to be in school. And, you know, this is 50,000 children that will be supported on top of 10,000 this year. So I think it is a huge moment, but it's not the end point. And we will be bringing forward wider reforms in the new year with a schools white paper.
You use the word desperate. I'll tell you, when I speak with callers, what mums and dads are often desperate for is the amount of time it takes to get that diagnosis, to get the help. What do you say about that? What can you do to try and shorten those time periods?
Yeah, I think that I hear that time and time again, where you know, parents will say that they can see something's going on, but they're just not listened to. And mum, I spoke to one of our listening conversations yesterday, said it took 6 years for support to be put in for her son. And by the time it had, you know, he'd reached crisis point and had to leave mainstream to go to a private school. And she'd wanted him to stay at school in her local community. So we want support to be available when needs emerge. And that is, you know, around teacher training. It's working in partnership with health to put in place speech and language support and other support for young people, and it's investing early. And just last week we announced that every Best Start in Life hub around the country would have a lead SEND practitioner who would be responsible for developing an early help offer for young people with special educational needs. So there is a huge amount more to do, but our ambition is that people do not have to fight for support. It is available, you know, as soon as need emerges, and that's why we're doing this work to develop the school's white paper and set out that future vision. But today is a big moment in building the foundations.
And I don't want to rain on your parade, but it comes as it's announced, half of secondary pupils have avoided school in the past year due to anxiety. This is research done by your own department. Is anxiety seen as an SEND? And again, your reaction to this quite high figure?
Yeah, I think what I hear from many children who have additional needs, like, you know, like autism, sensory needs, that they become very anxious about going to school if their needs aren't being met. So for some children, going straight into a big, busy school environment can be really hard. And that's why, you know, the money that we're investing to create spaces that young people can learn in and just have a safe space within the school. I met another young woman recently who was really thriving. She was getting brilliant results in her mocks, and 80% of the time she was in a mainstream school, but there was a safe space that she came back to at lunch because it was just too noisy. And she said that if that wasn't there, she didn't think she could be in school. So this makes a big difference.
Finally, I need to talk to you about the crisis within the NHS with this flu epidemic. You'll be aware schools in the north have temporarily closed. A school in Wales has temporarily closed. Children are being advised not to sing in assemblies. Do you see more school closures? What actions are your department taking in this field?
So locally, local health kind of leads are working with schools to make sure that support is in place. We know that, you know, flu is a massive issue this year, and you know, each area will make its own decisions. But we, you know, we do want children to be in school. We know that when, you know, in the pandemic, that lost learning, you were still feeling the impact of that today. So where possible, we want children to be in school. But, you know, we know that head teachers working with public health will put the right precautions in place.
Good luck with that investment today. Good speaking with you. Thank you for your time. Minister for School Standards, Georgia Gould, appearing here on LBC. We're going to take an early news bulletin, because after the news, your opportunity to put your calls to the Commissioner of the Met, Sir Mark Rowley. News on LBC at 7:58 is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, there are fears a spike in flu cases and a strike by resident doctors could collapse the NHS in England this winter. Hospital admissions for flu are continuing to rise sharply, days ahead of a planned pre-Christmas walkout by medics. The BMA is polling its members to see if they're willing to call off the action. Infectious diseases consultant Dr. Liz Whittaker says the flu season started much earlier this year.
Normally we only start seeing cases in December, but we've been having admissions since the end of October, and it has been very busy both in the emergency departments as well as the wards. We were expecting this to be a bad season because Australia had a bad season, and so we usually follow their pattern, but it was unusual in that it came early for us.
The US has suggested it might not turn up to Ukraine peace talks in Europe this weekend.
If there is a real chance of signing a peace agreement, if we feel like those meetings are worthy of someone on the United States' time this weekend, then we will send a representative. It's still up in the air whether we believe real peace can be accomplished and we can truly move the ball forward.
The White House Press Secretary Caroline Levitt says Donald Trump is sick of meetings just for the sake of meeting. The government has promised to create 50,000 more school places for children with special educational needs. Councils in England will receive £3 billion over 3 years as demand for support continues to rise. The Metropolitan Police says it's using data to better target its resources over Christmas. Hundreds of additional officers will patrol crime hotspots in London. Chief Inspector Steve Connolly spoke to LBC in Shoreditch.
If you look at some of the figures, so in fact every crime is down in this area compared to this time last year.
And you think that's fully down to having more officers around, visible presence?
Yeah, I'm convinced it is, yeah.
The Metropolitan Police Chief Sir Mark Rowley will be here for Call the Commissioner after the news. And the UK economy contracted for the second month running in October. Analysts had been expecting a slight rebound, but official figures show GDP fell by 0.1% last month. The Treasury says it's determined to defy forecasts on growth. In the city, the FTSE 100 is reopening at 97.03 after closing up 47 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather more settled today with sunny spells for many places. Some rain in central and eastern England with blustery showers in the northwest, a high of 12 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to
stay out all night? Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, okay, sales targets. Are we hitting
the dance floor? Party time! Woo-hoo!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2-for-1, you can choose glasses for at least two yous. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call the Commissioner. Put your calls to Sir Mark Rowley now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
And it is 1 minute after eight on Friday, the 12th of December, and the Commissioner is in the studio with me. First of all, thanks for coming. It's a very busy time of the year for you and your colleagues.
Good to see
appreciate
you, Nick. Happy Christmas.
And yeah, indeed. And thank you. You allowed my colleague Fraser Knight to come out as part of a patrol. And let's talk more broadly. Phase two of the new Met for London. What exactly does that mean for my listeners and for the good folk of the city?
I promised London 3 years ago we were going to improve policing. Phase one, we've delivered some fantastic results. Violence is a record low, murders down. We've got increasing cases of solving violence against women and girls. We're starting to bring shop theft down, street robbery down, phone theft, all the rest of it. And this is the next stage of things that we're going to do for Londoners. And it talks about things like how we're going to use technology because we're getting smaller as an organisation, so we need to get cleverer and sharper. And so we've been around 32 boroughs of London. We've got the last couple next week talking about our plans in sort of like community halls of maybe 200 people. And it's interesting, the questions today are different to 2 years ago.
In what way? How are the questions different?
So 2 years ago, people were saying, can we trust the police? And we worried about serious violence. Now people are more focused on antisocial behaviour and issues like the whole e-bikes, e-scooters issue. And you'll have seen, we've pointed out recently, we've now seized 2,500 of those. In the Christmas spirit, we had some crushed e-bikes in cubes outside Scotland Yard by the bottom of the Christmas tree,
good,
wrapped in ribbons. Just making a point, if you deregulate your bike and behave like a thug on it, then that's where your bike's going to end up.
This is, of course, I think there was front page coverage. You have some officers now, I'm going to call them all those, like scramble motorbikes. Is that what they're... what sort of kit are you using? These new bikes, motorbikes?
These new bikes. So we're buying these electric bikes, but sort of once they're above a certain speed, they are motorbikes. You need the same licence and regulation. The reason we're seizing the ones that are deregulated is they're illegal because people change it so they can go at high speed. It becomes a motorbike. If you don't have a licence and insurance, it's illegal. We seize it and we crush it. And it's also dangerous because they're messing around with the batteries, and these lithium batteries are
well, they cause house fires, don't they?
They cause house fires, etc. as well. So we're seizing them, we're getting the lithium batteries recycled, and then we're crushing the bikes, and again, that goes for recycling.
Okay, and what's the speed then? What can they operate at?
Some of them, I think, go up to 50 or 60. And
on a good lord.
They're sort of seriously scary. So there's okay. one mate called the Sauron bike. So we've got officers trained to ride them so we can do pursuits and we can catch these
idiots
on them.
How do you stop them? You can't tap their back wheel, can you?
There's lots of tactics I would love us to use, but we're not allowed to do it first of all sorts of safety reasons.
How do
reasons.
You stop it?
They have to stop eventually. So there's some long pursuits.
Well, they could go to Manchester Commission.
They're not going to go that far. The batteries don't last that long.
Oh, right,
one of the things we're doing at the moment, we're starting to use drones as part of our response and pursuit effort, and so that helps us respond quickly to incidents before officers get there and give officers a feed, but also we can do pursuits more safely.
All right, coming to the first call, I just need to challenge you. And obviously we want it to work, but you are aware we are the phone theft capital of Europe, criminals stealing 80,000 mobile devices last year, which, if you work it out, Commissioner, that's one every 6 minutes. That's not quite the picture you've just painted, is it?
So phone theft is down 15% this year. We've got further to go. That's not true.
That's from the Policy Exchange.
That's not true. So there was an article in the Times.
What's your view of the Policy Exchange?
Listen, that report...
Well, you used to give lectures at the Policy Exchange.
I've spoken at lots of different places. I've spoken at lots of different places, Nick, as have you. Listen, that report is... it's thinly veiled politics. It's forwarded by Chris Filch, Shadow Home Secretary. It's arguing that the Mayor of London should lose his powers over the police. I leave politics to politicians. On phone theft, it's down this year, it's going down further. There was an article in the Times about sort of 6 or 12 months ago about how similar rates of phone theft in some other big European cities. There's an international market in this. We arrested a gang a couple of months ago, you may have reported it, who were exporting 40,000 stolen phones a year to Hong Kong.
Yes.
We've got some other similar operations about to come to fruition. So we're breaking the organised crime business that's behind this, and as well as tackling the kids on the bikes and...
Not the European capital, which city is?
So I can't remember the name, the cities in the article.
You're telling me there are worse cities in Europe?
If you look at per capita, there are cities with comparable rates of theft. Because this is a global market.
Sure.
We've been putting pressure on the phone companies. We need Google and Apple, who run Android and the iOS operating system, to make it that your stolen phone can't be repurposed and sold again. That's what gives it value.
Presumably you lobby on that.
We have been lobbying on that.
And what response do you get from those providers?
Not good enough yet, frankly. Because you and I are both old enough to remember when car radios were being stolen out of cars.
I must have lost half a dozen.
Exactly. Yeah. And then... the sector redesigned cars, they got smart, and now you can't... We said to one of our kids, are you worried about your car radio being stolen out of your car? They'd look at you like you're a buffoon, wouldn't they? But sort of...
Well, they do anyway.
I have the same experience. But the sort of... it should be possible to turn a stolen phone into a brick. You as the owner, if your phone's been stolen, say it's an Apple phone or an Android phone, log on to the operating system,
record
it as stolen, and then it becomes a brick and it's never repurposable.
Why won't they help you, other forces?
I don't know. So we keep pressing them on that. Okay. We're having conversations with them, but they haven't moved quickly enough.
All right, let's get to the calls. That's what it's about. Sophie's in Mill Hill. Sophie, you're through to the Commissioner. Go ahead. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Hi, Commissioner. Thank you for taking my call. So from my own personal experience as a Jewish person living in London, and for many other Jews in my community, there is huge concern that officers at recent protests in London have been left to make highly discretionary decisions about whether to intervene or arrest, rather than adhering to a consistent standard of enforcing the law when it is clearly broken. So my question to you, Commissioner, is, do you believe that it is ever acceptable for the police to apply the law differently to different communities?
Commissioner. We should apply the law consistently to all communities, and we do that.
Are you happy that's been the case ever since those demonstrations began after the horrific events of October the 7th?
I'm not going to claim that in hundreds and hundreds of demonstrations, we've got everything perfect every time. But on a broad average, yes, everything has been consistent. I think that the way that the heat of protest has grown over recent years is extraordinary. It goes back to anti-vax protests, and then we get Black Lives Matter. We've had all those environmental protests trying to close down London. Now we've had pro-Palestine, pro-Israel and counter-protests. We've got these British nationalist protests. There's one at the weekend. And they're driving polarisation and anger. We use the law to the full effect.
Have you got enough laws? Do you have enough powers?
I think it's good that the Home Secretary's asked Lord Ken MacDonald to do a root and branch review of public order and hate crime legislation around these issues, because I do think some of these laws were written in the 1980s for a wholly different purpose, and we're applying them to full effect today. I'm sure, I imagine the caller will be concerned about some of the phrases that have been chanted at some of these protests. Every single one of those, we've put advice requests to the Crown Prosecution Service on a regular basis.
What is the situation if someone chants from the river to the sea, which you will be aware a lot of people see, not just as anti-Semitic, but threatening and harassment? Is an officer instructed to make an arrest or have a word? What does he or she do?
No, they're not, because we've repeatedly gone to CPS, say, can we prosecute in this circumstance? Can we prosecute in that circumstance? And almost without exception, the answer is no. So,
what's the threshold they have to cross?
It would need to be, some of the sort of hate crime legislation around sort of being sort of threatening or abusive and sort of with racist or religious hatred overtones, it doesn't get there. And because what lawyers and people will say is, whilst to some people it means obliteration of Israel and Jews, to other people it has different meanings to that. So that ambiguity means that you can't convict beyond a reasonable doubt in a court of law. Now, I'm not saying that's necessarily the view I would like it to be, but that's what the law is. Those are the laws at the moment, and we have to work within that.
Well, that's the structure. You haven't got a choice.
I haven't got a choice. So Parliament decides on the law. And so it's really frustrating to be using law that is so old. And Parliament has created laws that are actually quite vague and difficult, which makes it hard for officers.
Do you think people should be prosecuted for saying slogans such as from the river to the sea? You must have a view, Commissioner.
I think the fact that we have phrases being used on sort of anti-Palestine protests, anti-Israel protests, on British nationalist protests, people are choosing phrases to go close to the legal line that are offensive and upsetting to other communities. And I see that polarisation, that driving polarisation in London. I've lived in London for over 25 years. I see myself as a Londoner now. I wouldn't live anywhere else. I find that's really upsetting to see that, and sort of.
So there should be laws in place.
And I think the law isn't helping us with the current situation. Hopefully, Lord Ken MacDonald can find a thoughtful way through this for the Home Secretary.
All right, Sophie, thank you for your call. Najee is in Hendon. Najee, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Good morning, Sir Mark.
Morning, Najee.
So, Mark, my question is this. If you were presiding over the policing of a football match involving Maccabi Tel Aviv in London, and your force decided to ban all away fans, how would you react if it were revealed your evidence has not only been severely called into question by the very police you sourced it from, but also used an entirely fictitious account from the local Jewish community and used AI to get intelligence from a football match that never happened?
This is, of course, the game between Aston Villa and Maccabi Tel Aviv, with West Midlands police now in the frame for the use of AI.
I must declare a bizarre interest as an Aston Villa fan.
Yes.
I haven't read into the details. I don't know all the facts behind it. I'm not going to comment on the precise issues that happened in West Midlands. I think the Chief Constable's given evidence on that, and that's for...
He's been recalled as well. He's coming back. Yeah.
And that's for him to talk about. What I would say is, though, from my perspective, the only reason that I would expect the Metropolitan Police to ask football authorities to ban away fans in any circumstance is purely if those away fans are so violent and difficult that it presents a sort of an unmanageable policing problem. That has to be the key issue. We must not allow any other factors sort of...
So if Maccabi Tel Aviv was pulled to play West Ham or Tottenham, you could see circumstances by which you would tell the fans they can't come to the game?
Well, I'm not talking about... So it depends. It depends on any game. It could be a derby match, could be anything. If you had information that says so many of those fans are so violent that their behaviour is not policeable, that's a perfectly reasonable thing to say to the authorities. We think this is dangerous. It's a very high bar. It mustn't be influenced by community pressure and other factors like that. But
that's giving in to them, isn't it? That's allowing violent fans effectively to stop decent fans coming to watch a football match.
So, but if a club has a reputation that their travelling fans are so violent, that has to be planned against. But I think one of the public concerns has been on issues like this, does community pressure affect it? And the point I'm making, community pressure must never affect that. It must be an analytical judgment. Are these fans so dangerous that they can't safely be policed?
Assistant Chief Constable in the West Midlands, Mike O'Hara, has used AI and has apologised for misleading people, and particularly Jewish people up there. Has AI ever been used by the Met in circumstances such as this?
We're sort of experimenting with the use of AI, but you've clearly got to be very, very careful because it's...
What do those experiments mean? In what way are you experimenting?
Well, so for example, our facial recognition technology is a sort of AI, but we've gone to the National Physical Laboratory. We've had it tested to make sure it's accurate, to make sure it's fair. The world is using more and more technology. I'm sure your studio is using it.
Absolutely.
So we've got to use the best of technology, particularly as an organisation that's getting smaller. The thing is, we've got to be thoughtful and clever about it so we don't misuse it and use it clumsily. And I can understand why he's apologised.
All right, Naji, thank you. On the subject of facial recognition, Commissioner, Lee in Brentwood is scheduled as the next caller anyway. Lee, you're through to Sir Mark. Go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning, gents. So with the recent announcement of the stepping up of use of AI for facial recognition, it seems obvious it's going to be linked to the also announced digital ID cards. How can we be sure and trust that the police and the bodies behind working around with the police are going to delete not just the images, but also the data, the location data, etc., of people that are not on your watch list and therefore, you've assured us it's going to be instantly deleted? How can we trust that?
That's what we're doing, and that's been, we've said that very publicly. We get regularly inspected. Well,
you might say it, but I think my listener wants a sort of rather more definitive source of proof as how we can be so relaxed.
We get regularly inspected and sort of in all sorts of ways. We have duties in terms of data, and we report any breaches to the Data Protection Commissioner. So this is really important that we use these technologies carefully, which is what's behind your question. So that's why I say we have it independently tested that the technology works. We're very careful. The images that we put into our system, we're only looking for wanted offenders and people on court orders like registered sex offenders. In the last year, it led to the arrest of 1,000 people for very serious offences. People wanted for rape, people wanted for serious violence. It's helped us catch lots of registered sex offenders breaching their conditions, including one whom was walking a 6-year-old girl to a school, having recently pretended her mother, which is just horrific. I think we intercepted something that was a relationship building that would have ended up in a really, really ghastly place. Liam, I'd point out to you that... When you walk down the street and you walk past council CCTV or you walk past shop CCTV, they keep that video for 28 days. If you walk past one of our facial recognition cameras, if you're not wanted, it's deleted within a millisecond. So we're really careful. We don't want anyone's personal data unnecessarily. And we're going to stick to those very, very high standards because we recognise this will raise concern. Okay. The other point I'd make, 85% of Londoners support the use of this.
How do you know that?
And we've done survey work on it that's shown that. And that's, I think...
What, independent survey?
Independent survey.
Not as the Met, obviously.
No, I'm going out and ask a few mates. No, we've done it professionally.
Right, OK. And it's used as regards illegal e-bikes, it says. Is that right? Facial recognition?
It can capture anybody in any circumstance. So someone on a bike going past them, it will capture their face. So we need to use the technology to keep match fit with criminality, and this is one example of that.
All right, let's go to some of the questions. Lee, thank you. Let's go to some of the questions that are coming in over the email and the text. Now, this comes from a serving officer who asks me not to give you his or her name, and says the following: I've been told that I will have to leave the police because I'm not willing or able or up for the challenge for retraining. Could you ask the Commissioner to define exactly what he means by this? I think this was the initiative you put out, wasn't it, that you want officers to come to meet the fresh challenges. You said this a couple of months ago, as I recall.
That's such a vague question. I'm not quite sure what issue there...
Wasn't this the so-called voluntary exit scheme? The management model is widening efforts to purge the force of officers deemed unsuitable for service by launching a payoff scheme. I think that's what he or she is referring to.
So
who are not willing or able to change is what your current officer is. Clearly, he, she hasn't made whatever the grade is that you set. I mean, what define not willing or able to change?
So if he or she's decided they're not match fit for policing, they should leave, shouldn't they?
But what's match fit mean?
Well, they're asking a question. So what I've said to leaders, we've got some fantastic leaders. The vast majority of our people care deeply and are doing a good job. But the world's getting tougher. We've got to lift what we do for the communities of London. We've had a conversation with leaders about how we put more support around them, how we help them develop their leadership skills more. So this is supportive of the vast majority of our leaders. But some people might decide, actually, that they're not up for the challenges ahead, and that's okay. And
well, the Metropolitan Police Federation says it's a thinly veiled threat, Sir Mark.
So I need to have the best leaders available to support the people of London. We have made a lot of changes in the top levels of leadership in the top 30 police officers in London over the last 3 years. And we've had a serious conversation with the next tiers, the 700 people from Chief Superintendent to Chief Inspector. There's some fantastic people there. We're going to help them develop and be better leaders. We're investing in their training and development. But we're also going to get sharper in assessments to make sure that people understand where they're succeeding and where they can improve.
What about if this officer doesn't know what he, she's not getting right? How do they find out?
So they will get, well, like any organisation, they'll get their annual review where they get to their performance gets graded. We're also working with an independent supplier to help assess people's leadership capability. So they'll get all the support and help they want, but we're simply giving people a dignified route out. If they don't want this challenge, then there's a way they can step aside.
All right, one more before we go back to the calls. 20 after 8, by the way, if you're listening to the show. Rachel in Bexley says, can you ask the Commissioner, I know he can't go into what are called live cases, but will the hideous events that were seen at Charing Cross Police Station in custody suites never be repeated? Can he give that assurance?
So I sort of can go into live cases, actually, in the sense, as much as... The vast majority of those people have already left the Met. We've sacked most of them. A couple of them, there's still material to go through.
Are they not be taken to the courts? I'm sorry, obviously we've got that wrong.
So in most cases, no. So the IOPC are looking at whether any criminal investigations are justified. But in the meantime, that's the Independent Office of Police Complaints. But we've worked closely with them. We've worked faster with them, both of us, than we've ever done before. And we got fast-track misconduct hearings against most of the officers, and I think something like 7 of the 10 have already gone. That may be slightly wrong in the numbers. So,
how did you feel when you saw that videotape?
It's a ghastly... The content is ghastly, isn't it? You've got people with awful racist views.
Yep.
I've been really clear about bearing down on standards. We've sacked, forced out the organisation, 1,500 people in 3 years. That's more than triple the rate. A lot of that is because good colleagues have reported it. We're still working on that, so we still will find some ghastly individuals. We haven't finished that purge. But most of this stands on all the good men and women of the Met, and you know, you've come across a lot of the Met. They really care, and they're reporting their colleagues. They want to challenge this because they want their integrity not to be undermined by morons like the people who saw in that programme.
When do you see the process ending? When will all the rotten apples be out of the barrel?
I don't think you can ever have a perfect organisation of 45,000 people, but we can get it down to an absolute minimum, and we're a long way towards that, but there's more work to do.
Let's get some more calls. Chris is in Richmond. Chris, you're through to the Commissioner. Morning, Chris.
Good morning, Nick. Good morning, Sir Mark.
Morning, Chris.
I've been American here, living in London for 16 years, and just curious to think if you believe Donald Trump was right to criticise London Mayor Sadiq Khan.
Yes, he said that he was a nasty person. He also talked about the crime that engulfs London. Commissioner?
I'll leave the political sparring to the politicians. In terms of some of the comments that come from America about London, they're complete nonsense. If you look at this, for example, if you look
Let me just remind my list. Sorry to talk over you. So look at the crime you have in London. This is Donald Trump speaking. My mother loved London. She loved that city. Today you have people being stabbed in the ass or worse. Your mayor is a disaster. He's a nasty person. Let's not play the man. But Trump, president goes on, he's letting crime go. You have areas in London and in Paris where police don't even want to go anywhere near those areas. Commissioner.
So there's no-go areas. That's completely false.
Is that fake news?
I think how anybody in America can suggest the UK is violent is completely ridiculous. I think the homicide rate in London is lower than every single US state. It's lower than all their big cities. I think the murder rate in New York, last time I looked, is about three or four times higher than it is in London, sort of per capita. Whilst I make this point, the homicide rate in London is lower than it is in Toronto. It's lower than Paris. It's lower than Brussels. It's lower than Berlin. This is a safe city. I'm not going to pretend it's perfect. It's a safe city. Injury violence in London is lower than the other cities in the UK. And I think this trend of trying to rubbish London, some of which is driven by politics, we who are proud Londoners need to fight back about it, because there's lots to be proud of about London. Clearly, there are some crime issues that we're tackling, and it's not perfect, but I'm proud of the progress we're making at reducing crime.
What do you make about the personal insults hurled at the mayor by a president of the United States?
I leave political sparring to politicians.
OK, but he's wrong here. President Trump is totally wrong.
But I'm not going to talk about him personally, but...
The picture.
The picture that's been portrayed sometimes about London internationally is not accurate.
And coming back to that policy exchange report, there was the suggestion that Sadiq Khan should be stripped of responsibility for overseeing the Met. Either, they say, a slump in public confidence down to 45%. I have to ask you to react to both those elements.
So that's a report with a foreword written by the Shadow Home Secretary, Conservative Chris Philp.
Does that mean it's wrong, Commissioner?
I'm not going to get into the middle of political sparring.
The polling that they did, fewer than half of people think the Met's doing a good job. You're the boss. That's not great for the men and women brave enough to talk to the job, is it?
I can't speak for the quality of their polling. 54% of Londoners say, based on our surveying, independent survey again, 54% of Londoners say that the Metropolitan Police is getting better. Only 18% say the opposite. The vast majority of people are saying the Met is getting better. We are bringing crime down. We're making Londoners safer. Your team were out in Shoreditch where we're doing these amazing operations to keep people safe at Christmas.
Yep. On
the Big Friday shopping day a couple of weeks ago, the footfall in London was nearly three times as much in the previous 3 years. The policing operations we ran meant that crime was down 14%. London is a safe place to come. It's getting safer every day. My officers are working extraordinarily hard, and we as proud Londoners should kick back against the nonsense on social media trying to run it down.
Let's go. Chris, thank you for your call. Bob is in Beverley in East Yorkshire. Bob, your question. Morning.
Yeah, morning, both. I understand the Home Secretary may be looking at reducing the number of police services forces down to 12. Do you think this may lead to a further knocking of community policing at the local level?
I don't know that is exactly the Home Secretary's view, but I have said publicly previously, I think it's time for policing to be redesigned for now, because we're working on a model that was designed in a 1962 Royal Commission.
That's right. We went from unbelievably 117 forces down to 43.
Exactly.
Does 43 need to come 12?
43 needs better. It needs to reduce. So the thing behind your question, Bob, which I completely agree with, local community policing is absolutely critical. That is the foundation of what everybody needs and everybody wants, and that's what I hear when I'm out in London.
So would you be supportive of this, Commissioner?
In today's world, there are lots more complex threats and issues that we're dealing with, and all of those, because we've got too many police forces, too many headquarters, too many specialist units, too many national bodies, too many lead forces, all of that together sucks resources away from the local. If we organise policing better with fewer forces, we can have more resources locally in your community.
Is 12 the optimum number?
I don't know what the optimum number is.
What would happen to the Met? Would it grow?
The Met's the biggest force, and will probably still be the biggest force. So
would it grow? Would it take a bit of Kent? A bit of Essex?
I doubt that. But that's not on the table today. The key point is, we need policing to be organised as it best can be to serve local communities. And if we sort out the expensive mess of spaghetti of 43 force headquarters, 9 regional collaborations, West Midlands leading on ballistics intelligence, West Yorkshire leading on helicopters, the Met leading on certain things, all of that complexity costs a load of money, sucks resources away from policing your community, Bob. So that's why we need to make change so that you get a better local service.
Last couple of minutes together, I need to put you in an LBC investigation, which I think you've been made aware of, a former Metropolitan Police officer accused of being involved in a London paedophile ring or grooming gang. There were 2 complaints made against a custody sergeant back in 2012. This was elevated or escalated to detective chief inspector level. I understand you've been made aware of this. Did you know about this at the time, this case?
I know hundreds of cases. I don't know if I knew about it at the time. But that case was investigated there. And what we're doing now is we're, as part of our reviews of all the grooming cases, we're sort of reviewing that case. Were there any missed opportunities? Is there anything that was flawed in the investigation, or was it done completely properly?
But you were assistant commissioner of a specialist crime at this time, weren't you?
I was, yeah.
So did you know about the case?
We have hundreds of thousands of cases. I literally can't remember.
But if you knew about it, why wasn't it investigated? Why was he allowed to retire, the officer involved, allowed to retire prior to an investigation if you knew about the case?
I don't know the answer to that question.
How are we going to get to the answer to that question?
So I've got teams reviewing it. So that has been recently surfaced.
Yes, by LBC.
We've got teams reviewing whether the investigation was done properly. Clearly, you've got one account. You've got one account, Nicky.
But if,
Nicky, if you're AC
Specialist Crime Commissioner, you're AC Specialist Crime, allegations are made about an officer, a senior officer, being involved in a grooming gang, don't you drop everything and investigate it instantly?
So those things are normally dealt with our professional standards. My point is, that was probably dealt with professionally at the time, but we're going to double-check that. I've got officers pouring through it to double-check, was it dealt with professionally at the time?
You have no recollection of the case?
I have no recollection of the case.
OK, one last question on the phones, one last question by email. Frederick in Brixton, is the Commissioner able to give us an update on the Wimbledon car crash? It's more than 2 years and still no report. This is the incident, I think, at the preparatory school in Wimbledon, you may recall, about 2.5 years ago, where 2 girls lost their lives. What's the latest on that, Commissioner?
I think, as our public lines have said, we had the initial investigation reviewed. There's been some further investigative steps, and that work is ongoing, and we're keeping the families updated. I'm not going to say anything more online. Now.
2.5 years. What's the delay there?
I'm not going to get into the detail of that because I don't want to say anything beyond what families have already been told and the conversations we're having with CPS and looking at the potential for any prosecutions.
Okay, so will it be resolved soon? Can you at least tell me that?
I would expect to be resolved soon, yes.
Within 6 months? By the third anniversary?
I would expect to be resolved soon.
By the third anniversary?
I'm not going to make a date now, Nick.
Final question. Unfortunately, the call has gone, but I'll ask it anyway. 8:30 is the time. Metropolitan Police officers have been told they must be real if they are Freemasons under new rules. Why?
If you look back at history, there have been multiple public reports raise questions about Freemasons having disproportionate influence in the police. In about 2019 or 2020, the Daniel Morgan inquiry report recommended it should become declarable within the Met. The leadership team at the time decided not to do that.
This was the case involving, of course, the murder down in Sydenham back in 1987, as I recall.
So that was reviewed by Nuala Malone, former sort of ombudsman in Northern Ireland policing, and she felt that it should become declarable. That the leadership team at the time decided not to do that. Earlier this year, we did an intelligence review on whether we thought there were grounds to do that based on the integrity work we're doing in the Metropolitan Police, and a combination of the historic factors, including that recommendation, and the intelligence picture we can see in London today, we consulted over the summer. It's noteworthy that 2/3 of our officers think it ought to be declarable, which goes to the level of concern that any society which has a hierarchy, a degree of secrecy, and an expectation of sort of loyalty to each other, there's a concern, I think, widespread that may lead to not acting without fear or favour. I'm sure that that many Masons do great charity work and it's not a threat, but we need to do everything possible to protect the integrity of the organisation.
You're uncomfortable about Masons serving under you?
I'm not uncomfortable about Masons serving. I'm uncomfortable about the degree of secrecy. If we bring sunlight to it, then that avoids any conflict of interest for individuals, doesn't it, by people having to declare it.
The Masons are saying it's, quote, unlawful, disproportionate, unfair and discriminatory.
They can say that. I disagree. We've had, there've been if you look back in history, you'll see so many reports questioning Freemasonry and the police. We have a hard recommendation made like 5 years ago by Nuala Malone in relation to a very sensitive inquiry from history. We've looked at the intelligence picture we have today, and the combination of factors, I'm satisfied this is absolutely necessary. And the fact the majority of the good men and women in the Met are very clear this ought to be declarable, that they think undermines their trust in the organisation, that's important. There are many, many women officers in the organisation particularly who are massively relieved at this decision, okay, because they feel they are disadvantaged by sadly, a boys' club.
Have you ever been invited to become a Freemason?
No.
You have no interest in it?
I've got no interest in it whatsoever.
Okay. Finally, as I say farewell, it might be worth you saying a word, because many of us will have some kind of Christmas celebrations, but the men and women serving under you won't, because they will be out there 24 hours, 7 days a week, every single day, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, New Year's Eve, and everything else. A word to the officers that serve under you, Sir Mark.
I hope they know this, that they're fantastic men and women. They go out day in and day out. They do extraordinary things. When I do commendation ceremonies and long service medals, and I was at a ceremony this week, people have served for at least 40 years in the Metropolitan Police as police officers and police staff. One guy who's done over 50 years. These people care immensely, and this is not just a job, it's a vocation. They stretch themselves, they stress themselves. Their families and their friends see the products of that sometimes. Sometimes they get injured. They work antisocial hours. They really care about London. They're out there making a difference day in and day out, giving their best for you. So please give a thought for those officers as you're having your Christmas tipple.
Happy Christmas to you and all your colleagues.
Happy Christmas, Nick. Thank you.
Sir Mark, thanks for appearing on LBC. 8:34, time for headlines.
Sir Mark Rowley's told Nick that some of Donald Trump's claims about safety in London are nonsense. The head of the Met Police has denied there are no-go areas and says it's ridiculous for anyone in the US to suggest that Britain is violent. There are concerns hospital admissions for flu could triple by the peak of the pressures on the NHS in England. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, will be taking your calls with Nick later in the programme. Figures show the British economy contracted for the second month running in October. Analysts had been expecting a slight rebound, but official figures show GDP fell by 0.1% instead. LBC weather more settled today with sunny spells for many, some rain in central and eastern England with blustery showers in the northwest, a high of 12 degrees.
On the latest episode of The Newsagents,
we'll be asking whether Trump has become a pirate of the Caribbean, after his administration seized that oil tanker off the coast of Venezuela and discussed whether they would keep the oil. It's more complicated than that. We take you into all the twists and turns of what is going on with Trump and Venezuela.
Get the latest episode of The Newsagents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
New In, the latest custom-fit rechargeable hearing devices. Discreet, comfortable, and smart enough to help you catch every moment. Book a free hearing test at bootshearingcare.com. T's and C's apply.
You know what I love about Eurostar? I can change my ticket up to an hour before departure. I was supposed to get the 6 a.m. train, but when I got home at 3 a.m., I thought, hey, what's the rush? So I switched it to 2 p.m., and now I'm traveling fresh as a daisy.
Drink, monsieur?
Coffee, please.
Eurostar. Together, we go further. Changes limited to date and time. Pay ticket price difference subject to availability. Policy varies by class of travel. See Eurostar.com.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:37. Anthony, come to you in just a second. Let's just reflect a little on what we've heard there. There are very much two pictures emerging from London, and I appreciate so many of you who live outside London, but it is the capital of the country, and many of you have family and friends where you come and visit it. And then, of course, when you're visiting, how safe do you feel? And the Policy Exchange having that report, which was widely and roundly rubbished by the commissioner there, they're saying there's only 45% of Londoners there. They're also saying pretty appalling clear-up crimes, clear-up figures. One in 76 bike thefts, one in 179 thefts from a person, 80,000 mobile phones nicked last year. Phone capital. Well, the commissioner said that's not true. Now, I don't have the stats to hand. I have to say, then, the picture that he painted, that London is getting safer, that crime is coming down, it didn't feel the reality to me. And I live in London, and I've lived in London most of my life. Anthony's in Croydon. What's the reality as you see it? Anthony, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you? You okay?
Good, thank you. I want to hear what you take from what you've heard from the boss, from the commissioner.
Right, first and first, I mean, look, I agree with you. I share the same views as yourself. I don't think we should play London like it's heaven at the moment.
No.
But I can say that we've seen a massive impact in Croydon in terms of the live facial recognition.
Ah.
We are very much aware that women and girls are feeling a bit safer. I wouldn't say a lot safer, but they're feeling safer. And also, as you know, Nick, well, I don't know if you are aware, but serious youth violence has reduced in Croydon, and we do attribute some of that to live facial recognition.
Why? Also, what are cameras achieving in this field, would you say, then, Anthony?
Basically, I'm sure you're aware that Croydon, the first borough in London that have got a permanent live facial recognition. So if you go into the town centre of Croydon, faces are picked up straight away. And it's not only young people, it's not only a specific demographic that are targeted,
mm-hmm.
but also they've taken some serious sexual offenders off the streets, some real... I'm being mindful of the language that I use on air.
Yeah,
but they've taken off some real horrible people off the streets of Croydon. And it has worked. Me being a black male, Nick, initially we thought, is it going to impact black males disproportionately, etc.? But no, it's been quite balanced. What I would love to know, and what I would have loved the commissioner to share as well, is what type of people have been taken off the streets. What are the stats?
When you say what type, do you mean the level of offences or their ethnicity?
Level of offences and ethnicity, just to bring balance.
Well, I can give you the offences, I can't give you the ethnicity. Well, I'm not being challenging, I'm just asking, why is that important? That's a question mark, that's not
I think it's important because we're a borough that's 53% black, Asian, minority and ethnic. And please, look, I'm not here to, you know, put any race, culture or background on any pedestal here. But what I am saying, Nick, is that, look, we initially thought it's going to be disproportionate to us as black Londoners. And the results from what we're hearing through local police officers, etc., is that it's just doing such a great job.
Good.
And speaking to the community as well, Nick, which I get the opportunity to on a weekly basis.
How come? Are you a local councillor?
No, I'm not a local councillor, but I chair a lot of community meetings in Croydon.
Right.
And what we have seen is that an array of cultures are all saying they're feeling safer by having the live facial recognition cameras in North End of Croydon.
Well, that's what I'm asking. Do you feel safer, as the commissioner is saying, and be stressed that on at least two, maybe three occasions, or is the reality somewhat different? Anthony, have a safe weekend. Thank you for that. Let's move to other matters, because we've given policing now, gosh, more than 40 minutes. So at 8:41, more on the half of secondary school pupils avoiding school due to anxiety in the past year. Something I put to, in the first hour of the show, the Minister for School Standards, Georgia Gould, and she told me...
What I hear from many children who have additional needs, like autism, sensory needs, that they become very anxious about going to school if their needs aren't being met. So for some children, going straight into a big, busy school environment can be really hard. And that's why, you know, the money that we're investing to create spaces that young people can learn in and just have a safe space within the school. I met another young woman recently who was really thriving. She was getting brilliant results in her mocks, and 80% of the time she was in a mainstream school, but there was a safe space that she came back to at lunch because it was just too noisy. And she said that if that wasn't there, she didn't think she could be in school. So this makes a big difference.
But what's it like at the front line? Let's bring into the conversation Gavin English, who's deputy head of pastoral care at Alleyne's School in Dulwich in southeast London. And I'd better declare an interest. Both my sons attended that school. Indeed, I know Mr. English, and I've stood on the touchline of basketball games with him across much of south-east and south-west London. Gavin, good to speak to you again. It's been a while. What do you do for pastoral care in the amazing school that is Alleyne's? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. How you doing? Thanks so much for having me on.
Not at all.
Yeah, we do a great deal. It's really interesting. This is a very, very live conversation, I think. That most recent report, I don't think, as well as a surprise to that many people that work in education. There's a lot of really complex reasons why children might not feel like they can attend school. Some to do with the school itself and school environments. Some actually nothing to do with the school. We at Allains operate a safe space for kids, as you were talking about earlier on, where young people can go to take a bit of time out. But we also, as you refer to, we operate a really extensive co-curricular program, and we call it co-curricular because we think those activities absolutely have to sit alongside the students' academic experiences, so that they have different experiences in school, so that they have time with their friends doing things that they love, so that they can develop their passions in the places they are. The challenges that we have, I think, the challenges that we're seeing in the education system, and I should say I'm a chair of governors for a large state, comprehensive as well, so we right. I see this in different contexts. The challenge that we have, I think, is that there are young people with very, very specific needs, and I think education is getting better and better at meeting those needs. I think there is probably a lack of resource available to schools in terms of addressing that, and when we see local authority and external services really stressed, that can put schools in quite a difficult situation. But education really, at best, is a line of best fit. And frankly, for many children, schools are not always necessarily an easy place, and they sit quite far from that line.
Gavin, what are the children's main anxieties? What do they tell you and your colleagues? What worries them?
Well, I think at the very top of their list, if you look at that most recent piece of research, they talk about academic pressure, anxiety around tests and outcomes. They worry about fitting in socially. They worry about fear of judgment. They feel the weight of expectation in a way that I think is pretty challenging. Look, the problem is that, you know, we've updated everything in society, right? Except, I think, for the bit that prepares young people for it. So, look, it's all well and good. And absolutely, yes. Allains, we have created a safe space. But, you know, if our phones had evolved as little as our education system, we'd all still be dialing rotary, right?
Well, this is the point, lastly, Gavin. You're considerably younger than I, but when I went to school, there was no such thing as mobile phones and social media. I think when you went to school, there was certainly no social media. I don't think there were mobile phones. This is the incredible burden our children now have to bear, right?
Brilliant, exactly. So there's a lot of talk. We have to be very careful. I hear people speaking about a lack of resilience in young people. That is not what I see. Okay, I see a resilient generation, but we have let some pretty big cats out of bags for our kids. The world's on fire. Robots are taking your jobs. Here's the world and all of its ills in your pocket. We've asked them to be resilient in ways that I don't think any child should have to be.
Gavin, look after yourself. Happy Christmas to you and your family. Good to hear from you. Give my best to those who remember it at the school. Gavin English is Deputy Head and Pastoral Care at Allains School in Dulwich in South East London. Calls coming in on that. Caroline will take you the other side of the news. And we're talking about anxiety in our children. We've been talking about policing. We're going to be talking about the collapse of the NHS. So let's lift the mood. It's true, never mind things ain't what they used to be. Songs ain't what they used to be. They're far more depressing than they were 50 years ago, and we'll find out why after the 8:45 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
The head of the Metropolitan Police has dismissed claims from Washington about safety in London as nonsense. There are concerns hospital admissions for flu could triple by the peak of the epidemic, and figures show the British economy contracted for the second month running in October. LBC weather more settled with sunny spells for many, blustery in the northwest. A high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M4 westbound to the M25 junction. It's following an accident on the slip road. All the lanes are open, but it's still slow from Junction 4 at Heathrow. On the M40, the northbound exit slip road remains closed at Junction 2 at Beaconsfield, and there are long delays on the western stretch of the M25. It is very busy from Junction 17 at Maple Cross to 16 at the M40. It's because of an accident where two lanes are closed. Also, queues on the A13 eastbound from the Wennington interchange to the M25 junction, and that's also after an accident. On the train, severe delays on the Elizabeth line to Reading and Heathrow. Also, there's a reduced service on the Heathrow Express, and Great Western Railway services are delayed at Paddington.
This is LBC.
Hey Sainsbury's, have you got anything to help my money go further?
Well, if you want to make some big savings, make sure to use Nectar Prices and your Nectar Prices at Sainsbury's. Together, they can save you over £450 a year on your food shop.
Bring it on.
Download the Nectar app and tap into great savings. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us.
18 plus Nectar app required. For full terms, see help.sainsbury's.co.uk/help/nectar prices.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
The congestion charge helps to reduce traffic in central London. To ensure it remains effective while incentivising the switch to electric vehicles, from the 2nd of January, electric cars will be charged a 25% discounted rate of £13.50 rather than the new daily charge of £18. To receive the discount, electric cars must be registered on AutoPay. Further discounts are available for other electric vehicles. Search TfL AutoPay. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
This Christmas, McDonald's and the Elf on the Shelf are bringing festive tasks to your little ones, like writing a Christmas card for your postie.
Thank you. You're one happy helper.
Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 30th of December, from 11 a.m, includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last. Subject to availability, fair ordering policy applies.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Saturday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard your flight to Geneva. This is your captain speaking, and I would like to take a second to welcome our very special guests. All the skis and snowboards that enjoy a free flight to Winter Wonderland.
The best skiing experiences start with the right airline. Book your winter holiday now on Swiss.com and enjoy free gear transport.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's talk about anxiety now, children. 10 minutes before nine, which means you're 10 minutes away from the second of the powerhouse phone-ins here with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC this morning. You've had the Commissioner of the Met. You're going to get Health Secretary Wes Streeting in around 10 minutes, but you're getting Caroline in Winslow now, talking about anxiety among us all children. What do you want to tell me, Caroline? Good morning.
Hello, good morning, Nick. But one of my concerns, Nick, is the incredible increase you've had in special education needs in children.
I know.
And listening to Gavin English, I thought he's very sensible.
He's a very bright bloke. I know, Gavin. Very
incredible,
bright bloke.
But I was really impressed by him. And I think that he's got a great thing. We should ban, as Australia has, mobile phones for under 16.
Well, it's social media that's actually has been banned. Yeah, just to clarify. Yes. Yeah. What do you think that would bring about? What would you hope that would bring about?
I would think it would bring about less anxiety. I know that when you're at school ordinarily, because I think we're a similar age, Nick, that when I went to school, we didn't have mobile phones.
No.
Like, but you did have academic pressure, which is a completely different thing. It's up to you then to deal with it.
Yes.
But I think that when you've got people online saying, oh, you're this or you're that, or you're stupid if you don't do this, it's horrendous. And we have suicides from children who are being bullied online. But also with the government, they're giving $3 billion. How are they going to split that between the schools? That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Well, it's going to provide for, do we have 50,000 places? So that, whatever, how the 50 billion, that will be where the cash will go to provide those places. Why do you think there are more children now? I bet you sometimes hear of perhaps your children in your family or friends' children who have SEND. Why do you suppose it is?
I honestly don't know. I think it probably has to do with mobile phones. But also I think it's attitudes and the peer pressure we have at the moment. And as you know, the world's in a complete conundrum.
Yeah.
But I think that we come from a generation that had to get on with it, whatever.
But we didn't have social media.
So no, we didn't have
you and I, and particularly you as a woman, when you went home and you were in your teens and I was in my teens, you didn't then have girls saying that you didn't look very nice or you had the wrong colour blouse or what, you know, whatever, or you had your hair looked stupid, whatever, you know what I'm saying. And I didn't have people piling in that I was fat or I played rugby appallingly or I had sticky out ears. We got time off when we got home. That doesn't happen anymore.
No, it doesn't, because it goes on and on. And also when we were little, we didn't have so much television, which I also think doesn't help. You know, you have things like Grange Hill and whatever. I don't watch them.
Right.
But it's all about being the body perfect, the person perfect. And if you're not, you're castigated. And
would you, last question, and I sense we probably are roughly the same age, Caroline, would you want to be 11 and start secondary school all over again today?
Not really, no, because actually we've seen you in our load school, but never mind.
No, it's all right. You don't... You're all right now, Caroline. Teacher won't hear now. You're,
oh, I don't know.
And I fear Mum and Dad might not hear now, so I think you're okay to say it now. Thank you, Caroline. I don't say I didn't love... I wasn't interested. Did you? I didn't love school. Did I love school? Some of the... History. Oh, God, I just adored history. English, well, you can probably guess the subjects that I like, can't you? It's not going to take a lot to work out. Physics, not my strong point. I just think of the poor physics teachers just tried to teach me. And also sport, I wasn't particularly good. I think I told you that I followed my brother at once into the school that I attended. And we both gave it a try, but we weren't very good. And I remember the games teacher saying to my parents at a parents' night once, just tell me this is the last of your sons who's coming through the school. Fortunately, my parents had a fantastic sense of humour, so they thought it was hilarious. Yeah, we've inflicted two on you. That's more than any person can take. All right, let's try and keep the mood at a fairly high at the moment. Things, or even songs ain't what they used to be. Let's go back to 1973. Your name from the Intruders, with lyrics such as love and understanding, for what we have at stake, a little give and take is better than demanding. How lovely, isn't that nice? I think that's the right lyric. How different then to 2002. Cry me a river, the damage is done, so I guess I'll be leaving. Justin Timberlake, 2002. And now a study from the University of Vienna, where else, has said that modern pop songs are so much more negative than tracks made 50 years ago. Constant references to stress, negative sentiments, becoming more and more common. According to an analysis of 20,000 chart songs, I have to say in the US, if you didn't recognise all of those, 20,000 chart songs from the period 1973 to 2023. How has it changed? Matt Charlton, music writer and broadcaster, joins me now. OK, Matt, were you already aware of this? Had you pinpointed it? Or when my colleague phoned you up, did you think, hello, Nick's onto something here? Good morning.
I always think Nick's onto something, obviously. But no, I hadn't actually thought of that because music is so cyclical and it's very easy to sort of pick out a few tracks and draw a line. And the key thing you just also mentioned was that this is the USA we're talking about. And although we do obviously share pop music, there has been an absolute loss of innocence on their behalf from that point. So they've gone from Camelot to the Death Star, basically, in those 50 years. And they were just at the end of Vietnam in 1973, and 1971 had been this massive year for protest music, so that's obviously not factored in. And then there was the loss of innocence from the beginning of the 60s to the end of the 60s, so there's so many factors to bring in here.
Although in my game, and probably in yours, bad news sells, so
it does.
Is it the same with a song?
It is. I mean, people use music to express emotion, the stuff that they can't put into spoken words. So they write some lyrics and whatever the music does behind it lifts you or makes you feel a certain way. So yes, heartbreak absolutely sells. And let's look at Christmas. Since we're around that time, let's look at the big shiny 70s tracks, Merry Christmas Everybody, I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day, by George Michael being forlorn in the early late 80s about a relationship, right up to the number one just after 9/11, which was Mad World by Gary Jules. Now, that is not a Christmas song.
That's a very good point you make. Where do you see it going, lastly, Matt, and how much is it influenced by social media?
Well, it's more influenced by streaming than it is social media. It is the cult of the individual now, thanks, Thatcher. But it is the cult of the individual now, and there are far fewer bands and far more solo artists. And it is about catering to both children and adults in pop music now, where it used to be just teenagers. So it's going to be about more complex emotions, because pop music is a pensioner now. Pop music was a teenager in 1971, and that's just what happens to us. You get a bit battered and bruised over those years.
Brilliant perspective from Matt Charlton. Matt, thank you. You're a music writer and broadcaster. Apologies if you're trying to get through about your calls concerning Sir Mark Rowley, but we have another powerhouse phone in coming, and that's with Secretary of State of Health Wes Streeting. This has his announcement, or his warning, I should say, in one of the newspapers that we are getting perilously close to a collapse of the NHS if the resident doctors continue that strike action. That's coming up after an early news, coming up on 2 minutes before nine, LBC headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the head of the Metropolitan Police has dismissed President Trump's claims that London is unsafe. Mr. Trump used an interview earlier this week to claim there are some areas where even the police won't go. Sir Mark Rowley has told Nick that London is not perfect, but it's a safe city.
How anybody in America can suggest the UK is violent is completely ridiculous. I think the murder rate, the homicide rate in London is lower than every single US state. It's lower than all their big cities. I think the murder rate in New York, last time I looked, is about three or four times higher than it is in London, sort of per capita.
Sir Mark has confirmed the Met is reviewing claims that grooming allegations against an officer were covered up. It's after LBC found the individual was allowed to retire while still under investigation in 2012. The commissioners told Nick that teams are double-checking whether the case was dealt with properly. There are fears a spike in flu cases and a strike by resident doctors could collapse the NHS this winter. Hospital admissions for flu are continuing to rise sharply, days ahead of a planned pre-Christmas walkout by medics. Health Secretary Wes Streeting will be taking your calls after the news. Ministers have promised to create 50,000 more school places in England for children with special educational needs. Councils will receive £3 billion over 3 years to help deal with rising demand. Education Minister Georgia Gould says some families are desperate for more help.
Sadly, when I speak to parents, we're not yet good enough at putting support in early to help parents. And they find that often they have to wait, you know, years for effective support that means that things reach crisis point that adds to the issue. And that's part of, I think, the legacy of the last Conservative government.
Research suggests half of secondary pupils have missed school in the last year because they have anxiety. The most common cause cited in the poll was exam and grade pressure. And figures show the British economy contracted for the second month running in October. Analysts had been expecting a slight rebound, but figures show GDP fell by 0.1% over the month. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 39 points at 97.42. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather, more settled for most places with some sunny spells, but rain developing in central and eastern England, some blustery showers in the northwest. A high of 12 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Hey Sainsbury's, have you got anything to help my money go further?
Well, if you want to make some big savings, make sure to use Nectar Prices and your Nectar Prices at Sainsbury's. Together they can save you over £450 a year on your food shop.
Bring it on.
Download the Nectar app and tap into great savings. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us. 18 plus Nectar app required. For full terms, see help.sainsburys.co.uk/help/nectar-prices.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Put your questions to the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, now. Call 0345 6060 973.
Yeah, good morning to you. 1 minute after nine on Friday, the 12th of December, and the second of our Bauhaus phone-ins. I have the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, in front of me now. And without going down too many initials, the NHS might be part of our DNA, but it's sending out an SOS because it could be on the verge of collapse. A very powerful piece in one of the newspapers today, an article in one of the newspapers by the Health Secretary, who's in the studio with me, Wes Streeting. Good to have you on board. Thank you for coming in, Mr. Streeting.
Good morning.
Can you put into words what you've written in the paper this morning, your level of concern?
Yeah, so I think with the flu pressures we're seeing on the NHS at the moment, this is probably the worst pressure the NHS has faced since COVID. There is a lot of flu around, and there is a particularly aggressive strain that's knocking people out and are leading to not just people turning up at hospital, but even being admitted to hospital. Now, If we didn't have strikes looming over us, I would be extremely worried about that situation. This is always a hard and challenged time for the NHS in the run-up to Christmas and the first week of the new year. We could just about cope with that. The idea that we all have to contend with that plus strikes is dangerous, actually. And I am extremely worried about the pressure on staff, but more seriously, the risk to patients if we end up with that double whammy of both flu and strikes. That was why I actually said to the BMA earlier this week, if you are willing to call off these strikes while your members vote on the offer that we've put to you, I will extend your strike mandate to the 2nd of February so that you can rearrange your strikes in January.
Because that you're saying, get us over this hurdle and then we'll talk again in the new
year. Because that would do two things. Firstly, it would give BMA members more time, actually, to vote on this offer, to debate it with their colleagues, debate it with me, debate it with their union reps. It would remove the spectre of strikes. Because the challenge we've got now is that, let's say this ballot is successful from my point of view, resident doctors vote for it, call off the strikes. Some of the damage will have already been done because there will be patients who've already had their appointments cancelled and doctors who've had their leave cancelled to cover strikes. And I cannot understand why, when I offered to rearrange strikes in January, why they didn't take up that offer. Because if they wanted to just give me a kick in, well, there's an opportunity to do that in January. I can only assume that the reason why they refuse to do that is because they know that this week will be most painful for the NHS. Most painful for me, sure, but to be honest, given the pressure that puts on other NHS staff and the risk it poses to patients, I don't understand why the BMA have not been willing to compromise in that way. And I hope that BMA members will bear that in mind when they're filling in this electronic survey and being asked if they will agree to stand down strikes and vote for progress on jobs.
With the collapse of the NHS being midnight, how close to midnight would you say we are, Mr. Streeting? 1 minute to midnight?
Effectively, yeah. The thing that I'm genuinely fearful of is that even if I throw more money at this situation now at this time to get through the next week on strikes, there's only a finite number of doctors and staff. There's only a finite number of care home beds and community-based care. So if you've got strikes and you've got flu and you've got all of these trolleys on corridors and you've got demand going up rather than down, I just don't think there is a lever I can pull. I don't think there's an amount of money I can throw that means I can sit on your programme and guarantee patient safety over the next week. And that's a pretty terrifying position, for not just for me to be in, but for the doctors and NHS staff who are confronting that challenge to be in, because they are the ones that are going to be bearing it on the front line. I'll be there with them. If these strikes are going ahead, I'm not going to bury my head in the sand or look the other way. I'll go and see it firsthand.
You will visit hospitals during the dispute?
Absolutely. And
you'll seek to talk to doctors possibly on a picket line?
I'll talk to doctors anywhere.
You can talk to a doctor in a minute.
Yeah, I'm always willing to talk to the BMA.
Can I challenge you on that? Because you'll be aware, Mr. Streeting, that obviously I've been covering this here on the show. And the day after the offer, I spoke with the deputy chair of BMA's Resident Doctors Committee, Dr. Arjan Singh. And he said that the offer that you've put, you have not made available in writing. Yes or no?
I don't think that's true.
I don't think that's true.
No, we followed up. I met with the Resident Doctors Committee chair and members of the committee earlier this week. I made it clear what we were putting to them, which was emergency legislation to prioritise UK graduates.
Without being unnecessarily confrontational, a lot of people would like to see a politician's promise in writing.
Yeah, we wrote to the BMA.
Okay.
To set out the terms of the offer.
Okay, thank you. Let's get some calls in, and indeed we start with a doctor. Anthony in Epping, and you're through to the Health Secretary. Anthony, go ahead. Morning.
Hi, morning, Nick. Morning, Wes. Thank you so much for having me on. Cool. Wes, I am going to keep this very simple for you. Why should I, as a resident doctor, or as you prefer to call me, a juvenile delinquent, vote for your deal? If I can just say, my colleagues and I feel incredibly deceived by what's on the table. So far this year, 30,000 doctors have applied for 10,000 specialty posts, and 5,000 doctors, myself included, finished foundation training in August with no job, no training post, no clear future in the NHS. Not because we don't want to work, but because there aren't enough jobs. And what you're saying is by adding 4,000 jobs, you're not, at the end of the day, you're not making up the gap, and 1,000 of these jobs are non-training posts that are being repurposed. So when doctors are rejected from training next year, there will be even fewer jobs left, and you're not increasing the number of consultant posts either. So you're not fixing any bottlenecks that exist in the system.
I will stop there because I want to get I'm not cutting you off, Evan. I want to get Health Secretary in. Just, of course, to help my listeners, it was earlier this month, Health Secretary, you accused the British Medical Association of juvenile delinquency, and they were moaning minis, just to put in context Anthony's comments.
I have been very critical of the BMA's leadership.
Is he a juvenile delinquent?
That's true. Man. Well, I don't know Anthony, and I'm not going to...
But if he takes action,
I'm not going to insult him. But what I would say to Anthony is what he's just said isn't quite right. He is right to say that we are increasing the number of specialty training places from the 1,000 extra that we promised in our 10-year plan for the next 3 years to 4,000.
Permanent posts.
Yes, we're bringing forward 1,000 of those to the current application round. Now, he's right to say that those posts might otherwise have been what are known as locally employed doctors. But the reason why we're converting them into specialty places is because the complaint I've heard from the BMA and heard from doctors in those posts is they don't just want to be locally employed doctors in temporary jobs. They want to be in specialty training. So we're doing that. That's the first thing. The second thing that I really want to land with both Anthony and other resident doctors, because I think this point is definitely being missed. We're bringing forward, if they vote for this offer, emergency legislation in January, which will prioritise UK graduates who've trained here in the UK over applicants from overseas. Because as we discussed the last time I came on your programme, Nick, one of the reasons you've got 40,000 doctors applying for just 10,000 places is because loads of those people are applying from overseas. Now, if that emergency legislation is brought in and we get it through, the application rate goes from 4-1 to less than 2-1, and also will therefore open up a new application round in the spring. That means that some of, I don't know, I think Anthony maybe, but certainly many of Anthony's colleagues who've received rejections in recent weeks will have a new chance to get a specialty place. Right. So we go from 4-1 to less than 2-1. I don't know about you, Nick. I would love to apply for a job where I've got a less than 2-1 chance of getting it.
Don't start talking about applying for jobs, because you know that will take us, West Street.
I hope that reassures
Anthony.
Really, really hope that Anthony, I'm ignoring you, I really hope that Anthony and his colleagues...
Well, we're going to come back to Anthony.
Yeah, come back.
I just want to... No, because I want to bring another... Anthony, please hold on the line. Just to clarify, because Dr. Singh, the gentleman to whom I referred earlier, he said these 4,000 posts are not permanent. You are telling me they are permanent?
Yes, because they're specialty training places that people go
through. Let's bring another resident doctor in. Joss in Highgate. Joss, the other doctor is listening to you, as is the Health Secretary. Over to you. Good morning, Joss.
Hi, morning. Nice to speak to you both. I'm an F2 resident doctor who, from August, will be one of those doctors that already knows they're going to be unemployed.
Right.
I've been in the NHS for working since COVID in various jobs for 5-6 years. I don't want to leave, but I feel like I have been forced out a little bit. But I will be voting for this deal. My question is...
Why will you vote for the deal? Tell me what's in the deal that appeals to you then, Joss.
Because I think if you look at the progress that has been made in the past 2 years for resident doctors with pay, which I know has been controversial to bring in, so I recognise there's some political sacrifice that was done by the Health Secretary for that. I also think that the progress has been made in terms of training positions. And actually, when you listen, when I listened to your phone in a few weeks ago on the last resident doctor strike, and I could hear that the Health Secretary or Wes really did mean, it sounded like he meant what he said. So I do want to give some good grace and not go on strike this time round. My main question at the moment would be, what assurances can you give me as a resident doctor who will be unemployed come August that the changes that you're proposing will be brought in? And is there anything that you can do for someone like me who will be unemployed in August? Will these 1,000 jobs be open for someone like me?
Thanks, Joss.
Yes. So firstly, Joss, and just let me just say, not just to you, but to resident doctors right across the NHS, I'm really sorry that we are in this position where poor workforce planning over many years now has meant that people like you have gone through medical school, taken on that debt, thrown your heart and soul into it. It's hard to get into medical school. You work hard, you come out the other side, not unreasonably expecting that the NHS, especially in its current state, will have a job for you and you will be able to progress. That has not been happening, and that is the thing I've been trying to solve with this latest offer. And so the combination of those 1,000 places that we're bringing forward, plus UK prioritisation with the emergency legislation, because I think this is, to be honest, and I know Jack Fletcher, the chair of the Resident Doctors Committee, also agrees with this point, at least I'm about to make. It's the legislation that's really the game changer in terms of reducing the amount of competition for places. We're going to open up a new application round in the spring that will give fresh hope to people like Joss, and therefore I hope resident doctors will vote for it. The broader point I'd make just on pay
briefly,
and all of these
would,
other,
I have so many calls
all
to
of these, yeah, on these wider points, I'd just say to resident doctors,
well, I want you to bring, I do, I'm going to bring Anthony back. Joss,
yeah,
thank
okay,
you.
Bring Anthony, back.
Anthony, I don't normally do this, but you've heard a colleague who is actually going to vote in favour of the government deal. You've heard Mr. Streeting's response. Briefly, how would you like to reply? And I don't often afford this opportunity. A brief response from you, Anthony, if you would.
I would just say that the deal that is on the table currently doesn't deal with pay enough. It doesn't deal with pay at all. The 28.9% figure that's been bandied about by Mr. Streeting, it's been over a number of years. It completely negates the inflationary effect of doctors that doctors have experienced since 2008.
So, all right, well, let's...
I'd say a couple of things. Firstly, on jobs, Anthony, this is a substantial improvement from 4-1 to less than 2-1. Secondly, on pay, you are right that 28.9% pay rise covers a 3-year period. But honestly, there are not many people there are none in the public sector, and there are very few beyond who've had a 28.9% pay rise over the last few years. Now, I know that's not as far as you might want me to go, and the BMA might want me to go. It is as far as I think the country can afford right now. And I just ask you, whether it's on pay or whether it's on jobs, do not let perfect be the enemy of good. And this is the final point I will make. Strike action should always be a last resort. And I could not understand, and still cannot, why we've already had 2 rounds of strike action following a 28.9% pay rise. At this stage, when we are a week before Christmas, when you know the challenges the NHS is under even better than I do because you're working in it, I cannot understand why, when there is this jobs offer on the table that we've put together at breakneck speed through emergency legislation, why you and your colleagues might still vote for strike action now. I do not understand why your union did not take up a reasonable compromise of at least postponing strike action till January, if what you really want to do is give me a kick in. But for goodness sake, at this stage, voting against this offer, voting to go on strike, it's self-defeating for doctors. It puts untold pressure on other NHS staff who are going to be working in those conditions. And I do not make this point lightly or casually. It risks serious harm to patients.
Does it risk death?
I cannot guarantee... Honestly, Nick, I don't want to catastrophise or sensationalise. I cannot sit here and look you in the eye and tell you that no patient will come to harm or fatal harm. I cannot make that guarantee. So I urge doctors, please vote for this offer, end these strikes, and let's try and start 2026 with a fresh start. I'm happy to hit the reset button in terms of my relationship and the government's relationship with the BMA. I hope that they're willing to do the same. We could all do without this war of words. Right. And I do want to improve the lives and conditions of doctors and other NHS staff, and most importantly of all, get our NHS further down the road to recovery.
Anthony, thank you. Joss, thank you, and thank you for the work you do. Question here from Piers in Kent on a text. Does Wes Streeting agree that the BMA now is more a political organisation than a health organisation?
To be honest, it feels like it, in the interest of diplomacy and recognising what I've just said about hitting that reset button. I will resist the temptation to express fully my frustration with the BMA.
Do you regret the language of juvenile delinquents and moaning minis from earlier this month?
Well, it was aimed, let me just, for the avoidance of doubt, it was aimed squarely at the BMA. And I'll tell you what part of my frustration was. Because
there are members who we've just been speaking
on the, with. Yeah, well, I'm not attacking doctors,
so,
but
so
let
do
me...
Do you regret the language, Mr. Street?
No, not really, because I'll tell you what my frustration was with, because I think the moaning minis comment was in relation to the BMA on general practice. I'll tell you what my massive frustration was. Satisfaction with access to GP has gone from 60% to 75%, and we've rolled out online access to almost every surgery in the country. I think that is a massive cause for celebration, not for the government, but for GPs. And the GPs get it in the neck all the time, in the newspapers, in phone-ins. And I thought it was a real opportunity for government and the BMA to say together, look at what a brilliant job general practice is doing. It's not all solved. There's more to do. We know we've got to do more. But this is a really, really strong start. Instead, the BMA was saying, oh, this is all terrible. And that was my frustration. But look, okay. I'm willing to turn over a new leaf. And adopt a new style of diplomacy with the BMA in the new year, if we can hit this reset button, if we can call off the strikes and work together. And let me just say, because I was critical of the BMA GPC chair, Katie Bramall, she has also used some intemperate language for which she has expressed regret and said sorry. So actually, Nick, in that spirit of goodwill, okay, let me also repay that and say to Katie and her team on the BMA GP committee, I regret some of the things that I've said too. Let's end the war of words and work together in the new year.
I'm a peacemaker. I am radio's Henry Kissinger.
Blessed are the peacemakers, Nick, for they shall be called the children of God.
David's in Dagenham. David, you're through to the Health Secretary. Go ahead. Good morning.
Hello there, good morning. My question for the Health Secretary is that flu cases are rising in many parts of the country and schools are trying to balance good attendance with pupil and staff well-being. So with that in mind, what specific practical steps does the department expect schools to take at this point, and will there be any updated guidance if cases continue to increase?
Are you in education, David?
I am a head teacher of a junior school in Dagenham, East London.
And it's still open? Very close to Mr. Is it still open for business?
Absolutely. Still open and still enjoying our Christmas events, okay, but we are noticing an uptick in absences at the moment.
Straight to the Health Secretary.
Yeah, well, firstly, good luck. I know that this is a time of year when teachers are absolutely knackered after a really busy term, and I'm really glad you're still going. I'm really glad the Christmas parties are still going for the kids as well. That is all fine. The important thing, particularly for parents to know, if your children have flu or flu-like symptoms, not only is it okay to keep them off school, it's the right thing to do. You don't want them to overexert themselves with the flu, and you definitely don't want them spreading it around to other kids. So keep them at home. We've got to keep schools on the show on the road. It's terrible when children learn
closed,
learning.
Mr. Streeting, you're aware of that.
Schools will only close in extreme circumstances and on the advice of the local public health authorities. And that might be, for example, if there's a particularly nasty infection and there's a need for a deep clean or something like that. But schools will not be routinely closing, and they should not routinely close.
Should we routinely wear masks?
Not routinely, but again, this winter, it may be if you're visiting a relative in hospital or you're going to a care home, they might say, please wear a mask.
But not
and
if
they
walking
do,
down the
you
high
should.
Street. We don't need to wear it to go to the supermarket.
No, people might, and I do sometimes see people choosing to do that. That's okay. But we're not mandating or asking people to do that.
All right, just lastly, you mentioned Christmas shows. What was the biggest challenge in playing Tiny Tim? I read about that in the New Statesman when you were a child. What was the biggest challenge there?
Do you know, considering I only had two lines and they were both the same, which was God bless us everyone, my recollection in the auditions, after the auditions, when I was doing the rehearsals, was I kept on forgetting when to come in. But yes, no, I enjoyed playing Tiny Tim, but not as much as I enjoyed playing Scrooge.
Let's talk about flu. Let's talk about for Scrooge. Now, yeah, let's not go back to the Doctors.
That was a year four starring role. God, which is, we could go through all of my... I played Fagin in year 13.
You were Fagin. I can see you now being mocked up in the sun. They're getting it now. You've done a Scrooge and Fagin. On we go. Let's talk about the availability of jabs. Susanna in Woodford. I've just tried to book a private flu jab locally. No stocks, and they're saying... They've no idea where they get some. People are trying to follow the advice but can't. What are supplies like, asks Susanna.
Supplies, Susanna, should be fine.
Well, respectfully, they're not. She's tried.
Now, there may be, and I saw a report about Boots earlier this week, and we were straight in touch with Boots. There's no shortage of the flu vaccine. I think what's happening is demand is high, which is a good thing, so people are clearly following the advice. And it may be that in certain locations they get caught short on a particular day. We are working with the supply chain to make sure that we can get the vaccine to people as quickly as possible. So my advice to people, if you're popping along to your local pharmacist or a place you'd normally get your flu jab and they've run out, go online and see if there's somewhere else nearby, because the chances are there will be.
What site do you
go on to the NHS website.
The NHS website, I see. Okay, all right. Let's get to more calls. Thanks, Susanna. Harriet in St Albans. Harriet, you're through to West Streeting. Go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr Streeting.
Good morning.
First of all, I work in a maternity unit. I don't know if your listeners know, but 68 units out of the 119 maternity units across the UK are rated requires improvement or inadequate.
Yeah.
I've been listening.
We spoke earlier this week. Yeah, I recognise your voice. Go ahead, Harriet.
Just finished another night shift as well, which again we were four short.
Of how many? It should be eight from memory, shouldn't it?
Well, last night we were two maternity support workers and two midwives short. So we still had to close a ward to enable staffing to be adequate enough.
Right.
But again, still, we're all drowning. We're all still there. You mentioned earlier, Mrs. Streeting, that you were worried about the dangers of flu, and you stated, I'll quote, that it was dangerous. Now, in maternity, we are not only looking after one patient, we are looking after two. Mm. Our funding has been considerably cut. What are you going to do about it? When are we going to get the funding? When are we not going to be a dangerous service?
Well, firstly, thank you very much for calling in. And the numbers you reported there in terms of the number of maternity units that requires improvement and the proportion that represents is exactly why I've commissioned an urgent national investigation into the state of maternity care. Because while we've had some very high profile and frankly horrific examples of failures in specific trusts, I didn't want people to be lulled into a false sense of security that the problem is confined to a few very challenged trusts. I think we have a widespread problem in maternity and neonatal care that's been years
staff?
In the making.
You won't have heard Harriet's call, but I spoke to her earlier in this week. Instead of there being eight staff, there were four. They're routinely down on midwives or other nurses. How is that allowed to happen?
Well, we are recruiting and we'll continue to recruit more staff. However, I think I suspect we're hearing reported, and Harriet can tell us if otherwise, but I think we've got a lot of staff sickness absence, a lot of staff stress and burnout, which we need to deal with. And we've got, sitting beneath that, problems of culture, problems of practice. And I asked Valerie Amos to look at the state of maternity services, to look through, frankly, the reams and reams and reams of recommendations.
748
that have been
over the past 10 years.
That have been made, some of which have been acted upon, others of which have gathered dust on a shelf. So we'll do a full audit of all of that and then pull out the key urgent actions and priorities that are needed, as well as the wider, longer-term reform and modernisation plan. Yes. One thing I just want to ask Harriet, because we're putting £26 billion more into the NHS, we are also spending more on clinical negligence in maternity than we are on maternity services themselves, which I think is shocking, and I want to turn that around. But I just want to hear from Harriet. Describe a bit more to me, for my benefit actually, as much as your listeners, just tell me a bit about what's actually happening on the ground in your trust, Harriet, because it concerns me that you're describing cuts at a time when we're putting more money in. So I want to understand what type of decisions your local trust leaders and your ICB are making about funding for your service.
Harriet.
Thank you. Well, actually, the main decision at the moment is they are not pushing bank staff out, basically. They're not pushing those shifts out. You are correct. We have got a very high level of sickness. With regards to maternity staff, actually, the main, from the NMC insights, one of the main reasons for midwives either leaving within their training or newly qualified or even years down the line is the staffing levels. They are concerned that they cannot give that quality of care to the public. Now, from our trust, for example, when we were last week, we had the most horrendous week. We were so short-staffed. Those shifts were not allowed to be put out to the bank members, which they would have, some of them would have been filled, because from very, very high up above, they're saying, there's no funding, you cannot put that out, we haven't got the money. Now that puts not only our service users in danger, that puts staff in danger. We had, like I said to Nick earlier this week, we had staff in tears on the ward. We are all exhausted. We are burnt out. We need people. We've got newly qualified midwives who can't get jobs, just like your doctors. Yeah. They've spent £30,000 plus for 3 years training. They've got nowhere to work.
Yeah, I have to move.
Yeah, we worked on that latter point. We worked really intensively over the summer with the chief nurse and chief midwife to try and make sure we got people linked up to places.
But
Harriet, yeah, can you? I don't want to do sort of a name and shame on air. But if you wouldn't mind just dropping me details of the trust, because I can go and look at what's going on there. And if there's more we need to do as a government to be supportive, I can look at that as well.
Harriet, TV your details, and I know from past experience that Mr. Streeting or his team will be pretty rapidly. Can I put a question to you? You mentioned there the AMOS review.
Mm.
Can I talk to you about the CAS review?
Yes.
Where the government implemented, the Conservative, previous government, sorry, implemented a temporary ban on the use of puberty blockers in children. You'll be aware, Secretary of State, we now have this new trial in which 226 children, some as I read as young as 10, are going to be given this drug under this Pathways trial. Why?
So the CAS review, which was, as you say, commissioned by the previous government, led by one of the country's most experienced leading paediatricians, looked at what we do and need to do to support this particularly vulnerable group of children and young people who are suffering distress with their gender. And what Hilary CAS uncovered was kind of utterly shocking. Levels of unprofessionalism, lack of proper clinical oversight, and the prescription of puberty blockers without evidence. My Conservative predecessor, Victoria Atkins, introduced a temporary ban just as the general election was underway. When I came in, I upheld that and then extended it to become a permanent ban.
But
Hilary CAS also recommended that we do a proper study. The Pathway study involves a whole range of treatments and care, including therapeutics or mental health support. But it also included a trial on this puberty blockers thing. And I'm not comfortable, candidly, about it.
Why are you allowing it?
Because the two overriding concerns that I have, the only two really, are firstly, how do we keep these children safe and how do we make sure they receive effective and evidence-based care? And secondly, to follow clinical advice rather than, I mean, I've got loads of incoming. I've had my constituency office windows put in three times by trans activists and received all sorts of threats. Since this trial has been announced, I've been called all the names under the sun online and received some pretty nasty stuff. To be honest, the extreme stuff I don't care about anyway. The political noise I kind of put to one side. I'm following clinical advice.
So why is the cause of your discomfort?
Because I just, there's something about the sort of the opposition to this. And medication that delays or indeed stops a natural part of our human development, which is puberty, I am deeply uncomfortable with. Now, the clinical advice is to go ahead with the trial, and those who advocate this medication, and lots of other countries are using medication in these cases, suggest that for trans people, This is a better course of treatment than leaving them without and with all of the distress and harm that that can
but Mr.
cause.
Mr. Streeting, how does a 10 or 11-year-old give his or her assent?
Well, that is a good question. So in order to take part in that part of the trial, they will have had to have undergone thorough mental and physical health examination by doctors. They will then need to be approved by the local clinical trial team. There is then national clinical oversight, and crucially, they will also need the consent of parents. And it's gone through rounds and rounds of ethical approvals to approve this kind of study. So that's the base upon which we are proceeding. We're following that evidence. As I say, it doesn't sit comfortably with me. I'm trying really hard as a politician not to interfere or block clinical advice by people who are frankly far more qualified than me. And, you know, there will be debate on this. And I certainly, one thing we've learned in this whole area is not to shout down people who've got concerns.
But so how will we know if it's worked, lastly?
There'll be regular reports. And obviously that's the benefit of a trial like this, is that it produces a study report.
All right, final call. We'll get 1 minute, what last one. Hannah in Yeovil. Hannah, your question, if you would, briefly.
Hi, Nick. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
Good morning.
Mr. Streeting, can you categorically rule out a leadership challenge on a joint ticket with Angela Rayner, yes or no?
Yes.
We almost got to the end of the show.
Yes. Yes is the short answer.
Are you disappointed, Hannah?
Yes is the short answer to that.
Not at all, no.
No, you're not, okay. I have to ask you, Mr. Streeting, in an interview you said the following: the problem with a practical, technocratic approach is if someone says, I've got a maintenance company and mine's cheaper, why wouldn't people go, okay, we'll give that maintenance team a try? Is the Prime Minister then too technocratic?
No, it's not a criticism of the Prime Minister. I think it is a challenge to all of us, because all of us in government and in the Cabinet in particular have a responsibility to get the government's message across. And sometimes I think what we're guilty of is coming on and listing a whole load of stuff we've done. Now, that's a good thing, because we've done loads of stuff since the elections to deliver our manifesto. The problem with big, long shopping lists is you can't always remember what's on it. And people kind of walk away thinking, well, I kind of heard some stuff they're doing, but I can't quite remember what it's about. We've got to be much better at putting an account of what this government is about and who it's for. We'll take this issue of child poverty. Like, I was at, Steve would mind me saying this, I was at a Cabinet meeting earlier this week, and Steve Reid, our housing secretary, was reporting that we've seen, I think, something like over 60 children in our country have died in temporary accommodation in the last 5 years. Now, if a serial killer had killed over 60 children in our country over that length of time, it would be splashed on the front of every newspaper. We would remember the name of that killer with infamy for the rest of our lives. But in this case, children are quietly dying. Their parents do not have a megaphone or a microphone. And they are dying in shabby temporary accommodation. What this government is doing is lifting 500,000 children out of poverty by abolishing the two-child limit. We are tackling homelessness, street homelessness and rough sleeping, but also trying to end that temporary accommodation with $3.5 billion. Well, I think at the moment, let's be honest, politicians aren't very popular, full stop. We came in not just to a broken economy and broken public services, but broken trust in politics. And that does take time to turn around. But also, we've got to give a much better account of what we're doing, who we're fighting for, and what we're fighting for. On the NHS, for example, we're cutting waiting lists for the first time in 15 years.
Yes,
patient satisfaction with GP has risen from 60% to 75%. Ambulances were arriving about 10 minutes faster this autumn, this year, than they were last year. So things are beginning to improve. It's on the road to recovery, but there's more to do.
But lastly, you'll have seen the GDP figures over the last 3 months. 0.2 down to 0.1. We go into a new year at minus 0.1. You might be fixing the NHS, but your colleagues aren't fixing the economy.
Well, we're definitely not out of the woods on the economy, and the Chancellor isn't happy with those figures. We have, at points since we came in, had the fastest growing economy in the G7.
Well, please don't
But as the Chancellor said, the economy is not out of the woods, and she got quite a bit of flack, didn't she, just ahead of the budget when she stood up and said that things are very challenging, I'm going to have to make some difficult choices, and she got a lot of flack for that. But Rachel's following these numbers really closely, even before they're published, and so when she's out there warning us about the health of the economy and what she's doing to tackle it. That's why. So we do need to do better. We know that. And look, I think the approach we've got to take as a government, Nick, when we're doing well and when things are improving, we've got to come on, say so, tell that story and give people confidence and hope that the country is moving in the right direction. Where it's not going well, we've got to hold our hands up, say this isn't good enough, we're going to do better and take the criticism on the chin. That's what Rachel is doing on the economy.
I've made you late in your schedule. A resident doctor listening now can't decide. They vote over the weekend, as I understand it, and then on Monday morning we get... So over the weekend, this doctor, he or she, just doesn't know which way to go, kind of is persuaded by the BMA, has just listened to Wes Streeting on LBC. A final... Can I use the word plea?
Is that No, plea is absolutely the right word. If you vote for this deal... It means that right now, for people who had job rejection letters in recent weeks, we reduce the competition for specialty places from 4 to 1 to less than 2 to 1. It means we increase the number of specialty places, extra specialty places, to 4,000, with 1,000 of those being delivered right now. It means that we can start the new year with a fresh start, with no strikes this Christmas. Better for patients, better for your colleagues, and better for you. And on pay, we've had a 28.9% pay rise. We haven't even got to the next pay round yet. And of course, we can talk to your union about that well ahead of time. We can do that in the new year. We've made a lot of progress together, not just on pay and on jobs, but on the NHS itself. Don't put that recovery at risk. Don't make lives of your colleagues harder next week, and don't put the lives of patients at risk. Work with a government that wants to work with you. Vote for the deal and let's start 2026 with a good deal and a fresh start.
Wes Streeting, thanks for your time this morning appearing here on LBC 9:38. Let's get some headlines.
Thank you.
The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has told Nick the NHS is facing its worst pressure since the pandemic. He has urged resident doctors in England to call off their pre-Christmas strike as hospitals face a surge in flu cases.
I cannot understand why, when I offered to rearrange strikes in January, why they didn't take up that offer. Because if they wanted to just give me a kick in, well, there's an opportunity to do that in January. I can only assume that the reason why they refuse to do that is because they know that this week will be most painful for the NHS.
The head of the Metropolitan Police has told Nick it is ridiculous for anyone in the US to say London is unsafe. Donald Trump's claimed there are parts of London where even the police won't go. Analysts have blamed pre-budget speculation and concerns for an unexpected fall in GDP. Most economists had been expecting an uptick in growth, but the economy contracted by 0.1% in October. LBC weather more settled today with sunny spells for many places, some rain in central and eastern England, and blustery showers in the northwest. A high of 12 degrees.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall.
With the Work and Pensions Secretary, Pat McFadden. Do you see it as your mission, as your job, to reforming welfare, to cutting welfare?
Changing people's life stories should be part of this argument, not just looking at a spreadsheet of income.
I can just be clear with the country, it will mean cutting people's benefits.
I'm not going to rule things in or rule things out.
Why?
Today, because I want to wait for
we can see the sustainability figures. You've said yourself that in the long term it's not sustainable, so therefore it must mean logically that we must spend at some point less money on individual benefits.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall. Sunday morning from 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal. And we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo. The original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the River Cam without a paddle.
train home. That was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Unsurprisingly, no shortage of calls coming in reaction to Health Secretary Wes Streeting. And I think it was a plea from the heart there, right at the end of our conversation, to those resident doctors. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, was listening to that and other points made in the 40 minutes that he was with us.
You couldn't kick him out of the studio, could you?
I'd still be here. You had to break the door down to get in.
Excuse me, it's my turn now, Health Secretary. Look, we've just heard Wes Streeting's leadership pitch. If there ever is a vacancy, is it? You heard him, pleading with the junior doctors. You heard him talking about child poverty, what Labour stand for, what this government stands for, really trying to make his case, not just on the NHS, but other things that are not on his brief. So I very much felt it was a very wide-ranging...
This was the technocratic element that we discussed.
Absolutely. And that interview that he gave yesterday, where he was, it's fair to say, critical of the Prime Minister. He said he wasn't. He said it's not about the Prime Minister and not being critical. He was critical of the way this government its approaches at the moment, and he thinks that it can be done differently.
Well, of course, it's worth reminding the listeners. I think it was last month he was the victim of a drive-by shooting.
And it's fair to say that, you know, it's understandable why he'd be a little bit miffed off with number 10 Downing Street and the whole government operation and how things have been. And I think that is absolutely fair. But obviously on his patch, he is facing, a very, very difficult winter, this flu epidemic, which we know is sweeping through hospitals. Very interesting, I thought. We're not going back to a COVID situation where we all have to wear masks. He said he was glad kids' Christmas parties are going ahead, but you've got to keep your kids off school if they do have flu-like systems. The government is not... Symptoms, sorry. If the government is not telling us to wear a mask, if you want to, that's absolutely fine, but there is no government mandate. We're not going back to those days where the government is telling us what to do. Schools should only be closing in extreme circumstances. That will be interesting, I think, for many school leaders, many teachers who have been crying out, I think, for a little bit of guidance from the government.
And it's fair to say, Tasha, it's not been forthcoming.
No,
they've
absolutely
asked for guidance and everybody's stayed up. At least the health secretary said, well, this is what I think should happen.
Exactly. You keep your kids off school if they've got flu symptoms, get your jabs
if
you're eligible, get them to the parties if they can. I think that's where we are. But his plea to the junior doctors, plea to the resident doctors, plea to the BMA, you could hear it in his voice saying, you know, I can't promise that people will not die in these strikes if you decide to go on strike next week. This is a make or break weekend for the BMA, for the health secretary, for the health service.
You're a canny political watcher. What of his tactic to say, all right, give me a kicking in January, just delay it, let's just get over Christmas, then we'll all have our Christmas celebration and we'll start again and I'll extend your mandate till February. That's quite a smart move.
It is. And I think it is very politically astute. You know, they obviously want to extend their strike mandate for as long as it will go. It is, I think, at the moment going just until January. So
yes,
they can't
exactly
strike.
He was give them another month.
So basically, he's saying, look, I will put that back if indeed you want to give me a kicking, but this is not the time to do so. We know, and we're hearing from all the health experts, that it's a couple of weeks before this is really, really, really going to bite in hospitals. That's exactly the time where these people are going on strike. We expect it from 5 days from the 17th of December if they decide to go ahead. He's obviously making the case. You heard from those two junior doctors, including from Anthony, who it's fair to say, obviously very frustrated with the health secretary. There's no offer on pay. But Mr. Streeting making the case, I really want to create these jobs. This is going to be monetary value for you. I'm putting forward an offer where we can pay for your exams. So lots of good things on the table that they hope, and everybody at the Department for Health really got their fingers crossed that this can get over the line this weekend.
Again, you're closer to it than I, but we both pick up on these rumours and these whiffs that he's the leader in waiting, whatever. If he does not avert this strike, if it does go ahead, does that damage his ambitions for future advancement, or will they say, well, he was dealing with a bunch, he gave every possible opportunity he could, he was never going to prevent the strike? Which way would the ball bounce, do you think?
I think it will have an impact on a future leadership contest, and exactly this is why I think, partially, why the government are throwing everything at trying to get this vote over the line. It will hugely help Wes Streeting's chances of becoming Prime Minister, if that is what he wants to do, if he can solve something so crucial and fix the NHS. We know it's such a fundamental part of society, and obviously we know that the government are having some progress on things like waiting lists, getting those down. He talked about all of the things that he does feel the government have done well on the NHS. In order to win another election, Labour absolutely has to show progress on that, and Wes Streeting is very much a key part of that.
LBC's political editor Natasha Clark reporting. Coming to your calls, Marion, you're going to be talking about that, and we are wrapping up other aspects, not least, of course, that controversial puberty blockers trial. It's 9:46, LBC News headlines then. Thomas Watts.
The health secretary's told Nick the NHS is facing its worst pressure since the pandemic because of the double whammy of flu and doctors' strikes. The head of the Metropolitan Police has told LBC it is ridiculous for anyone in the US to say London is unsafe, and analysts have blamed pre-budget speculation and concerns for an unexpected fall in GDP. LBC weather more settled with sunny spells for many, rain in central and eastern areas with some blustery showers in the northwest, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 18 at Chorley Wood to 16 at the M40. It's because of an accident and three lanes are closed. Also on the M40 northbound at junction 2 at Beaconsfield, the exit slip road remains closed to the A355, and that's because of an oil spillage. In New Addington, Fieldway remains closed both ways, and that's because of an ongoing investigation, and that's starting to cause delays on the approach. Also, it's very busy on the A40 on the Westway eastbound heading towards the Marylebone flyover, and the North Circular Road is slow westbound to the Clockhouse interchange. On the trains, the Great Western Railway still suffering with delays and cancellations between Paddington and Reading.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Why on earth does the head of the Met find himself having to defend London against the accusations of liars, racists and Donald Trump?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Hey Sainsbury's, off to my neighbour's Christmas do later. Got any gift ideas?
How about our Taste the Difference chocolate chip shortbread tin, deliciously Moorish all butter biscuits in a bougie box? Or give them a treat for the eyes and the taste buds with our indulgent Taste the Difference cherry and amaretto panettone. What do you think?
I think I'd rather keep them for myself.
Looking for a tasty festive gift? Ask Sainsbury's. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us.
Subject to availability, available in selected supermarkets and online.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Yep, I'm still dancing. And there's still time to get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. So turn up that dial.
The Euro Millions jackpot is £14 million.
Go on, play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
If you have an M&S online account or a Sparks card, your data may have been exposed in a recent cyber attack. Earlier this year, M&S confirmed a data breach affecting customer information, including personal data. If you've ever shopped online at M&S or used Sparks, you could be entitled to compensation through a group action claim. Check your eligibility today at jointheclaim.com. It's quick, secure and easy to do online at jointheclaim.com.
Train to Brighton with the besties. Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating is going to be pure chaos.
Oh, Em, you better hold my hand. Oh, I'm going up.
No, styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus, free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Right, it's been a busy one, so let's get the last few minutes so that I can actually speak with you, Marion in Potter's Bar. You work for the NHS, I've got to know. What exactly do you do? May I ask? Good morning.
I do admin.
And how's that working out?
Well, what I wanted to say to Wes was, you know, why is it that we've got 9 managers for one department with the top earner earning £100,000 a year?
Well, how many people are in your department?
There's about 15.
You've got 9 managers for 15 people?
Yeah, and it's run over 2 sites, but the highest earner earns £100,000 a year.
And do they control other staff?
No, just that one speciality.
And I know you probably don't want to give away too many details, but is it a very difficult speciality? You know, is it very extreme, demanding a lot of time? Is it like, it won't be A&E, I imagine.
It's not A&E. It covers an outpatient department and some sort of theatre work.
And have you always worked? How long have you worked in this department?
15 years.
And has it always been staffed, manager-wise, like this, with 15,
no.
What I'm going to call clinical staff, and 9 admin? Is it fair to call you admin and clinical? Is that roughly right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Has it always been 15 clinical versus 9 admin?
No. It's in the last sort of 3 years, they've added more managers. And I don't understand why, you know, we could cut down on the managers and put this money into nursing and doctors.
And I would imagine you're all there on the shop floor, the clinicals. You must talk about this all the time if you've got... You're basically
yes.
carrying 9 managers, one of whom, did you say, making more than £100,000?
Yes.
And lastly, give me a level of frustration that causes.
Well, they don't really... The top ones don't really seem to do much. You know, and there is a lot of sickness within that top department, so it's very frustrating that... You know.
All right, this is what we're going to do. Marion, if we didn't have the resident doctors on the verge of going on strike and a flu epidemic the like of which we haven't seen for 10 years, you were the next call. And I'm so sorry that I didn't get to you. I really am. But I have to make a decision and the flu... But that is ridiculous. I wonder if you just briefly talk to one of my colleagues. And if you give us the details, obviously we won't say who you are and we'll approach it a different way. But that does seem extraordinary. And I'll talk to my colleagues. So we'll have a brief word with you now. Tell us what you can. And I'm very sorry if I'd had longer... But he obviously wanted to make that last plea to junior doctors. Marion, thank you. Let's stay with and thank you for the work you do, I should say that, because you are at least clinical staff. Darren in Birmingham, whatever you think of West Streeting, you have to admit he's a talented politician, eloquent and always across his brief with plain speaking. Gordon says, if Wes, it's interesting, he's got the politician who's just known by their first name. They are so happy when they get there. Boris, Wes, doesn't work with Keir, does it? Just doesn't. If Wes did become the new PM, he would, in my opinion, be 1,000 times better than the current incumbent. He would still be lumbered, though, with his absolutely useless cabinet, who must be, collectively, the worst we have ever known. Well, I don't know necessarily that you're right. I think if he came in as a new leader, a new PM, he'd have probably quite a shake-up. Asif has been hanging on the line for some time. You're in Newcastle. You've got concerns about Wes Streeting's handling of the NHS. What are the problems in your view? Good morning.
Correct. Good morning, Nick. Thank you for having me on. Yes, I listen to Wes Streeting from 9 o'clock, and I find his attitude towards the VMA and the doctors quite abhorrent. This is a chap who's used the NHS. He had kidney cancer in 2021, and he's ungrateful. He talks about his frustration towards the junior doctors, towards the resident doctors. I'm a resident doctor myself for the last 20 years. The NHS, he just firefights. I mean, the fact is that he was given the letter. He was given a letter from the BMA about 3 or 4 weeks ago. He just responded a week before the strikes and asked us to make a decision. I mean, that's disgusting. Why is he playing politics with doctors who look after people's health?
While I'm not seeking to, if that is correct, and I will take your word for it, sir, why could ask you, why would your union choose to play politics with people's well-being?
We're not. We look after people.
Well, you won't... Obviously, you're not going to assist their well-being if you all withdraw your labour.
Right, OK. And what did the government do for the other 300 days of the year when we're not striking? They do nothing for the NHS. He's increased the pay by 29%. He goes on about it like anything. We have had pay cuts, real-time pay cuts, because of inflation. Now, let me finish. We've had real-time pay cuts for the last... I've been in the NHS 25 years. It's gone downhill enormously. We look after patients. We want to do our best for them. We're not in it for the money. We're in it for fair pay so we can pay our bills, pay our mortgages, pay our cars.
And while I don't want it to be a race to the bottom, Asif, the same could be said of police officers, firefighters, teachers and others who have not enjoyed that sort of pay award. And I don't want it to be a race to the bottom, but that is the reality.
But you're comparing us to other people. I mean, individual.
I'm sorry. You are public sector workers, so it is fair to bring other public sector workers' salaries into the equation, Asif.
Right, OK. But
and
I think
for you to have a 29%...
Go ahead. No, you carry on.
You to enjoy a 29% when there will be...
That's a joke. Enjoy. Do you think doctors are enjoying their working conditions in hospitals?
I said, you weren't listening, respect. I said, to enjoy a 29% pay rise, because so many of my listeners now, 29%, they are making do with a tenth of that. That is the reality. Your argument as regards jobs, I think, is on far, far firmer foundations than your argument.
Your argument in regard to what? In regard to what you say is on far firmer ground?
Your argument to jobs. Yes, how you can't advance. That seems to have been scandalous.
Yeah, that's important. But the working, we are there to look after patients and provide good care for patients, and he has not given us a platform to do that. The hospitals are not enough beds. They go on about the flu pandemic. It's atrocious how many beds have been closed, hospitals have been closed. In the, I know it's not his government that did that. It's the 15 years of Tories. But, I mean, he goes on about I think the journalists and the health sector go on about the pay rise. But when you pay peanuts and you increase it by 29 peanuts, you're still being paid peanuts.
All right. I know which way you're going to vote, lastly, on this industrial action.
Yeah, I'm going to vote for strike action.
I think you probably would. Thank you for the job you do. I'm grateful for your input. I want to finish the last minute, and I'm afraid it is only a minute. Vic is in Kingston. The trans issue is very pertinent because you have a child. Is that right, Vicky? What did you take from what you heard from Wes Streeting?
Well, I was going to say, Nick, that it was a misunderstanding from his point of view, but actually I think you misunderstand the puberty blockers issues, and the way you portray it sometimes, what you say, gives a public forum to have that misunderstanding. For example, you say about 10, 11-year-olds having puberty blockers. What you're doing is missing the point. And I think we need to have a proper conversation. Maybe me and you have a proper conversation so you're better informed. And my child was offered puberty blockers as part of his pathway in the NHS 6 years ago, and I disagreed. But to disagree, I had to go through a special review, which is the most ridiculous situation you can think of. He'd been through puberty. Why was he being offered puberty blockers? But the NHS at that time said, this is what you have to do to be treated by us. So it was contested. But a 10, 11-year-old who's in such distress with their gender dysphoria, there's a very good case that they need puberty blockers to withhold puberty. So you can't mix the two groups. What you're doing is taking information and then saying to the public, it's a controversial pathway. Why would a 10, 11-year-old, somebody who's so young, need puberty blockers? And you leave that out there as a radio presenter, and you're leaving it out there in people's minds that this isn't right for a 10, 11-year-old.
I'm sorry you feel that way. I don't know if it's right, because I'm certainly not a doctor. One issue that I do think we need to explore is how that individual gives consent or assent. But Vicky, regrettably, we have to leave it there. I promise you, if you're listening, the next time we get into this, I will make you the first caller, and I wish your child well. But I have to end there because I'm already encroaching on James's time. Vicky, have a good weekend. I'm done. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can read and watch the latest from LBC, put your news catchers in the order that you want, and pause and rewind live radio. Listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official app for free from your app store now. That's it for the week. James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. I'll be with you Monday morning from 7. Meantime, have a safe weekend.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock and, well, two interviews on The Breakfast Show and then two questions for Mid-Morning Matters, as I think I will call the show this week. I speak, of course, of Sir Mark Rowley doing what is long overdue, but the poor fella can't really do it unless he's got the opportunity to do so, pushing back against this tidal wave of lies, racism, bigotry, whatever you want to call it. They all fit Donald Trump, don't they, tragically? But with regard to our capital city, who would have thought that people who style themselves as patriots would be dedicating so much energy and time, people in this country, dedicating so much energy and time to denigrating London, to denigrating the capital city and lying about it? Why do they do it? And did Wes Streeting just play the mother of all blinders?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Health Secretary Wes Streeting has told LBC he is genuinely fearful for the NHS as it faces a doctor's strike and a surge in flu cases. The BMA is polling resident doctors in England to see if they are willing to call off next week's walkout. Mr. Streeting's warned the health service could collapse if they don't.
The challenge we've got now is that, let's say, this ballot is successful from my point of view. Resident doctors vote for it, call off the strikes. Some of the damage will have already been done because there will be patients who've already had their appointments cancelled and doctors who've had their leave cancelled to cover strikes. And I cannot understand why, when I offered to rearrange strikes in January, why they didn't take up that offer. Because if they wanted to just give me a kick in, well, there's an opportunity to do that in January.
The Metropolitan Police Commissioner has rejected Donald Trump's claims about crime in London. Sir Mark Rowley has told LBC suggestions from the US about no-go areas in the capital are politically motivated.
The picture that's been portrayed sometimes about London internationally is not accurate. London is a safe place to come. It's getting safer every day. My officers are working extraordinarily hard. Okay. And we as proud Londoners should kick back against the nonsense on social media trying to run it down.
Sir Mark has confirmed Scotland Yard is looking at an alleged cover-up of abuse allegations against an officer. It's after LBC revealed the individual was allowed to retire while he was still under investigation in 2012. The commissioners told LBC that teams are double-checking their handling of the case at the time. Local authorities in England are to be given £3 billion to create 50,000 special needs places in schools. They will be able to use the money for facilities like support rooms within conventional schools. Businesses and consumers pre-budget jitters have been blamed for another fall in economic growth. Most economists had been expecting an uptick in GDP, but the economy contracted by 0.1% in October. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 97.30. That is up 27. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather more settled today with sunny spells for many places, some rain in central and eastern England, and some blustery showers in the northwest. A high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Minutes after 10 is the time. A very good morning to you. I hope you're well today. I do find as I get older, I lean towards saying things to you at the top of the show like, oh, it's mild out, isn't it? I think I might be turning into my mum. But it is mild out, isn't it, for this time of year? I am sort of turning the heating off when I get home, not just in full dad mode, but because it doesn't need to be on. Shall we begin with a little bit of Socrates? Should we begin every show until Christmas with a little bit of Socrates? I speak, of course, of the ancient Greek philosopher, not the legendary Brazilian football player, or Socrates. Shall I tell you what the cultural reference is, or shall I just let you have that little nugget, that little Easter egg, for those who have similar enthusiasms to me? Socrates. We'll start with a little bit of Socrates. The unexamined life is not worth living, said the great man himself, probably. And I wonder some mornings where the line is between self-examination and self-obsession. I mean, how much do you examine your life before you turn into a crashing bore who can only ever talk about themselves? Yeah, all right, don't all shout at once. I appreciate I'm vulnerable to that accusation sometimes. And the reason I mention it is because I noticed something today about, what's his chops, Wes Streeting. I have a weird reaction to people who seem too good to be true, or people who are pulling away from the pack. I've got it a bit with Zach Polanski, the leader of the Greens, but that is very much a holding pattern until I get the opportunity to find out more about him and ideally sit down with him for an hour or so on full disclosure. I have done that with Wes Streeting, and I came out of that. There's two interviews Nick did this morning. I don't know if you heard either of them or both of them or neither of them, but I'll give you a quick précis. The head of the Met, Sir Mark Rowley, is quite remarkably and understandably guarded. Much harder interview, I imagine. I'm sure Nick would agree. A much harder interview than Wes Streeting, because some people professionally either can't or won't give you much. You know, for example, he refused to specifically take on the ludicrous insults, the hideous insults that the President of the United States, in a profoundly racist fashion, has directed at our triple times elected mayor, Sadiq Khan, and he won't get involved in that. He calls it a sparring between politicians. I don't. I was tempted to do that as a phone-in. I suppose I still might. Whether or not that is the correct thing to do, whether or not he should stick up for the man, I kind of think probably not. Focus on the words that Trump has said about London, rather than necessarily getting involved in the to-ing and fro-ing of what you could call political point scoring. I personally would make an exception when it gets racist. But I suppose you could mount a case for saying that Trump hasn't actually been explicitly racist, it's just that everybody knows he is. So, Rowley doesn't give you much as an interviewer, and when you're listening to interviewee, you can hear the guardrails. You can hear the portcullises. Is that the plural of portcullis? It must be, mustn't it? Is it a Latin word? It might be portcullis. Portcullis, Socrates, Greek to Latin, and it's only 7 minutes after 10. You can hear the portcullises that are in place. You don't even need to hear them coming down because they've never been lifted up. And that's fine. You wouldn't want the head of the Met to overshare necessarily, would you? You wouldn't want the head of the Metropolitan Police to come out of the studio and go, ooh, I wonder if I went a little bit too far that time. Streeting's a much more interesting character in many ways, just from solely from an interviewing point of view, because he seems to be quite unguarded on occasion. Calling the BMA or the sort of leadership of the BMA moaning minis not long ago, and expressing to Nick his complete lack of respect, regret for that turn of phrase. There's a very interesting interview in the New Statesman magazine this weekend in which he's pretty outspoken about his dissatisfaction with elements of his own government. But it could be that that's incredibly cynical and carefully contrived. It may not be unguarded at all. It just looks unguarded. And this is what I mean about my own slightly reflex reactions to people who everybody else is beginning to paint as the answer to our problems. So whether it is Zach Polanski or Wes Streeting, even if I really, really liked someone previously, as soon as they move into that position, I don't know whether it's personal or professional, actually. If I didn't do this for a living, would I think it's my job to work harder to look for the flaws, to look for the problems, to look for the feet of clay, if you like, which is a very roundabout way of telling you that I can't find any this morning. When is the last time I came on air and said to you, I think that a politician's performance during a potential or a period of crisis has been close to perfect? When's the last time I did that? I don't know that I ever have, actually. And oddly, it's not just the politician I'm going to be saying that about this morning. I would suggest that Sir Mark Rowley's response to Donald Trump's lies about London, which are lifted wholesale from Russian bots, racists, and Nigel Farage fans, although I appreciate that if that were a Venn diagram,